Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Diggity dog, we're on the front end of another brand new week here of Conversation Radio. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the horn for new listeners, just so you'll know. This is the redefinition, the reinvigoration of the American dialogue, the American discussion, the American debate that is the Head On Radio Network, and that is my little 3 hours of it. So, welcome aboard. Now, you know that candor is the heart and soul of what I try to bring to this program, so let me be candid. I'm going to need some help tonight. Because, frankly, I've been kind of tied up for the last couple of days. We've got remotes coming up that I really want to come off well and to have work correctly. Tomorrow evening on the campus of West Virginia State University and Institute West Virginia, a lecture by noted author David K. Johnston. Then Wednesday, we'll be doing the same thing with the same guy again in Beckley. And I'll bet you the remarks change, I'll bet you the content changes, and I'll bet you the response changes. Just bet you. But that's all in the future. But making that sort of a future happen takes a lot of work in the present. Because there's a lot of stuff that goes into doing this. And that's what I've been focused on. Well, that and the fact that one of ours is heading off on a field trip. And lots to prepare for there as well. Because, among other things, Agnes doesn't easily let go her babies out of the nest. So, lots of preparations going on. And drink plenty of water. It's going to be warm. Don't get dehydrated. So, yeah, me, I'm excited. I'm excited for her. And I'm thinking she's going to have a wonderful, wonderful time doing what she's doing. So that's kind of where I've been. I'm a little bit, well, it's not to say that I'm just mailing it in. I'm not, but my head is, I'm not as zeroed in as I usually am, if maybe that's the best way to put it. So, your phone calls become especially relevant this evening, and you know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, Head On, that's the toll-free number. If you want to use your minutes or your nickel or whatever, 304-658-3333 rings straight into the studio, too. and you can help us save a little bit of bucks. It's all very simple. Very, very simple. I think the appropriate place to start is probably by following up a little bit on something we talked about on Friday evening, to wit, the Savage Wiener and his, you know, does loathsome do justice to what he said? Disgusting seems a little bit too weak a word for the attack that he levied on people who had never said a word, unkind word about him. To recap, just in case you've forgotten, the Savage Wiener, otherwise known as Michael Savage, whose real name is Wiener, and yeah, so we call him the Savage Wiener, attacked parents, really, of autistic children this past week. No, really. Among other things, he said it's a racket. Autism is a racket. Autism is a fraud. He said only minority children get asthma because they're just trying to game the system. But then with all that as set up, he moved on the autism parents and the autistic children and declared via the platform that he is given that autism is just a fake. And frankly, it was, well, first of all, he must have failing numbers. It must be a little bit like what Flesh Flimball said about him, and that is that, my friends, he's not even in my rearview mirror. And so this is an attempt to generate publicity, because anybody who's been in the Savage Wiener's racket doing the Savage Wiener's shtick understands that there is no such thing as bad publicity. And so this has certainly garnered him some publicity. But is there no line that we cross in the United States? If you're a so-called conservative, is there no line you can cross? Now, granted, Imus got served up for some loathsome remarks. But Imus was served up because, you know, he wasn't that conservative. Flush Flimball, O'Reilly, the Savage Wiener, they've all said, frankly, worse things than what Imus said. And in the same department, you know, racially charged, hateful, bigoted things. They've said them, and they got away with it because they're conservative. Why, that's just conservative commentary. You know, it's okay if you're a Republican. I-O-K-I-Y-A-R, Iakiar. But you have to wonder about Michael Savage. Either it was a desperate cry for publicity help, or he's just as big a jackass as we've always thought. I'll tell you what autism is. In 99% of the cases, it's a brat who hasn't been told to cut the act out. That's what autism is. What do you mean they scream and they're silent? They don't have a father around to tell them, don't act like a moron. You'll get nowhere in life. Stop acting like a putz. Straighten up. Act like a man. Don't sit there crying and screaming, idiot. Lordy. But there is a response, and that's what I wanted to share with you. That's why I said this was the starting place. There was a protest today in New York City. They protested in New York City outside the studios of WOR Radio. WOR is located at 111 Broadway in Manhattan. And these parents, Autism United and Angry Parents, were demanding the immediate firing of Michael the Savage Wiener. They were also calling on parents of autistic children to boycott all stations carrying the signal. Now, what is surprising to me out of this is that the racial slur was let slide. because the whole thing, if you recall the audio, the whole thing began with a rehash of why only minority children get asthma. Frankly, at today's event, the Reverend Jackson and other leaders from the minority communities should have been standing shoulder to shoulder with the autism parents if they weren't. And I don't know if they were or were not. Al Sharpton should have been there. There will be a national protest in San Francisco 2 days from now, Wednesday, July the 23rd. Autism groups and parents from across the nation are going to gather to protest the Savage Wieners' disdain and hateful treatment of children and their parents who work so hard to create normal lives. One out of every 150 American children are diagnosed with autism today. The funny thing is, you cannot make that statistically go around the globe. One out of 150 American children are diagnosed with autism today because of what has been done to the American environment, of what has been done to the places that these children grow up in, but not just that, because of what's been done with the stuff that we put into their little bodies when they're tiny, and the stuff that goes into their little bodies when they are still in the womb. Curiously, with all that being prologue, curiously, the right-wing religion industry that's all pro-life, they're nowhere to be seen in this protest either. Because after all, if God wants them to be autistic, they're going to be autistic and ain't nothing we can do about it. God made the chemicals we put in them vaccines. God made that mercury that went into that thimerosal that kept them vaccines. You know how it goes. As long as you can blame God, you don't have to take responsibility for anything else. That's what makes the religion industry so dangerous in terms of things like global warming. Well, if God wants it to heat up, that's probably a sign of the end times. Hard to stomach. Hard to stomach. So I've made some contacts out there. I don't know if I'll hear from these folks. I would like to. I'd like for you to hear someone from Autism United and Angry Parents talk a little bit about what it means to raise a child with those kinds of challenges and how it felt to have the Savage Wiener just stick a knife in and twist. The protest was at 2 o'clock today in New York City, and the press announcement. And here's hoping it was successful, and here's hoping that they got some coverage. Lord knows they deserve it. And I've got, like I said, I've got a contact out to see what we can do about bringing some folks on air just to talk about it. And of course, with right-wing thugs, it's always a challenge. It's always a race to see who can get it. Right-wing radio is a constant race to the bottom. And it's not even, it's a wind sprint to the bottom. It's a desperate sprint to see who can be nastiest, who can be vilest, who can be filthiest, the firstest. And I guess the Savage Wiener gets a little bit of a head start on this one. Honestly, it's so low and so disgusting that I have a hard time imagining anybody but the Savage Wiener actually doing this. But there is some other news in right-wing hate radio today. It's a great day to be the life support system for a haircut. Sean, the Hannity job. The Hannity job just got a raise. The Hannity job signed a deal between ABC Networks and Premier Radio Networks that keeps him going for another 5 years. 5 more years of filth, 5 more years of distortion, 5 more years of untruth, 5 more years of mendacity, 5 more years of duplicity, 5 more years of Hannity job garbage. What's he get for those 5 years? $20 million apiece. $100 million contract with ABC Networks and Premier Radio Networks that will allow both ABC and Clear Channel, aha! Because after all, Premier Radio Networks is owned by Clear Channel. Premier Radio Networks is a wholly owned captive subsidiary of Clear Channel. And so Flush Flemball and the Hannity job, the life support system for a haircut, are going to be like brothers. Brothers who sit around behind microphones and spew hate. Brothers who sit around behind microphones and pollute the American airwaves with nothing but garbage. And you know this is just eating the Hannity job alive. Because there's Flush Flemball getting $400 million and the Hannity job, who just knows he's a whole lot purtier than Flush Flemball, is only getting $100 million. It's got to be deep in his guts. That's got to be bugging him. But we don't know what comes next. Maybe the Hannity job can pick up on the autism is a racket business. The Hannity job has been known to run with serious right-wing hate-mongering anti-Semites and Klan people, and I mean that's just who Hannity is. And for all that, he's going to be paid $100 million. Congratulations to you, Sean Hannity job. Congratulations to you, you life support system for a haircut. You've just been paid $100 million by your corporate masters to spew out garbage and lies and deceit and hide corporate inaccountability, dismiss corporate criminal behavior, all of that, and you sold it for $100 million. I guess everybody has a price. $100 million to sit around behind a microphone and talk about how Obama is a Muslim. Good work if you can get it, I reckon. But it's got to... And by the way, just to finish up this segment on, you know, with a proper rounding out, what did Shakespeare say? And the whole thing is rounded with a sleep. Well, it's getting nice and froggy for former junkie and magic underwear wearer Glenn Beck. If you can imagine, CNN and Headline News is going to give in the next 24 hours is going to give Glenn Beck a big chunk of its entire broadcast day. He's been asked to guest host for CNN's automaton, Larry King. He'll do that guest host gig tonight. What, Bobo the Trained Chimp wasn't available? Bobo the Trained Chimp... had higher standards than want to work the Larry King desk? Glenn Beck is going to be on air for a total of 8 hours between 7 p.m. tonight and 7 a.m. tomorrow morning. It is noted that that is fully a third. You know, 24 divided by 8, 3. Yep, that's a third. That's going to be a full third of the combined airtime of CNN and Headline News. What can we expect? What can we expect of Glenn Beck on Larry King Live tonight? Well, I don't know who the guest is. But, for instance, there's what he said to Congressman Keith Ellison, who is in fact Muslim and was elected to the House of Representatives from his district in Minnesota, and to whom Glenn Beck said, "What I feel like saying is," because he talks like that, "Sir, prove to me that you are not working with our enemies." And then most recently, he had this to say about the concentration camp prisoners in Guantanamo Bay. "If I were president, our policy is we're going to shoot them all in the head. If we think they are against us, we're going to shoot them and kill them, period. And by the way, poor people are in fact lazy." Oh, there's just pearl after pearl after pearl after pearl. "Yeah, I don't have a lot of African-American friends." Well, Glenn, you're Mormon, and your church only decided that people of African-American heritage are fully human back in 1975, so they probably haven't gotten around to just really running real tight with you people yet. "I don't have a lot of African-American friends, and I think part of it is because I'm afraid that I would be in open conversation, and I would say something that somebody would take wrong, and then it would be a nightmare." It just goes, the hits just keep on coming. Let's see, there were the September 11th victims' families. "I wonder if I'm alone in this. You know, it took me about a year to start hating the 9/11 victims' families. Took me about a year." Wonder when they're going to announce his $100 million contract, because this is the kind of $100 million hate that you don't just get every day out of the right-wing hate machine. This is professional hate. Then there was his comment, there is comments about Senator Clinton. "She's like the stereotypical, excuse the expression, but this is the way, she's the stereotypical bitch, you know what I mean?" What a guy. So here is a total bigot, a completely prejudiced horse's rear end, northbound end of a southbound horse. He's going to get a third of CNN's broadcast time in the next 24 hours. A third. How many liberals will get broadcast time on CNN in the next 24 hours? Yeah, none. None. So he said, "I don't know why I'm being called to fill in for a living legend like Larry King." Neither do the rest of us, Glenn. Neither do the rest of us. A third. CNN and Headline News together, and a third of it is going to be Glenn Beck. Whew. So much for balance. Well, Anderson Cooper's liberal. Please, Jesus, help me. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Well, I'm looking at a New York Times article that says Savage stands by his autism remarks. And he's refusing to apologize.
Oh, of course. That's the next step in the publicity parade. I will never apologize. They can't make me apologize. I'm correct. And then he sets up, and then it turns into a big publicity, you know, the kind of stuff he couldn't buy.
Yeah. Savage is, well, let's face it, a pig is a pig, no matter which way you look at him. As far as that Yahoo on CNN, have you noticed that that when people start talking about the 9/11 families and 9/11 victims, they never mention the victims of 9/11 who were Muslims?
Oh, no. By now, the national myth is such that only lily white people were harmed in September, on September 11th.
Horse pucky.
Well, you know that, and I know that. But, I mean, you know, it's become our myth, hasn't it?
Not mine. I live in a fact-based universe. I'm sorry.
I'm not talking about you. I'm not talking about us. I'm talking about the great howling expanse of America out there that only gets its news from, you know, ABC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, Fox, that crowd.
Oh yeah.
You know, the people who tune in Glenn Beck on Headline News and think it's a news program.
Dick, did you see that? Just a little bouncing around here. Did you see that flyer one of the state Senate races? State Senator Kevin Bryant that he put up?
So far it's not ringing a bell.
Okay, it's up on HuffPo. He put up a flyer, and it says, it's got a picture of Osama bin Laden and Barack Obama wearing Somalia dress. And it says on it, the difference between Obama and Osama is just a little BS.
Oh, isn't that cute?
Isn't he just cute? Isn't he just precious?
Yeah, a little BS. So is he saying that Osama is more credible? I got a problem. You know, some of these things that right-wingers do, they really ought to run past somebody else first, because you could really characterize that to turn that guy into an Osama fan. You know, why is he saying nice things about Osama, you know?
It's just one of those things that just, you know, please tell me you didn't do this. But he did. It's just icky, icky, icky.
Yeah, it is.
Not typical.
No, I'm looking at the article you referenced now, and see, he's saying he stands by his remarks, but now he's backing off because he's probably had a couple of phone calls from the Swedish mattress and the bowling balls that pick up, or the vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls company, and buy gold now and register your business in Las Vegas, and the people that have been complained to. And he's saying, my main point remains true. It is an overdiagnosed medical condition. In my readings, there is no definitive medical diagnosis for autism. I played the audio on Friday.
Yeah.
And you heard it. And it was uncut and wasn't doctored or anything. There was nothing in there where he said it is an overdiagnosed medical condition.
He has an overdiagnosed medical condition, or an undiagnosed medical condition. It's called diarrhea of the mouth.
Or what we call around here, word vomit. I'll get done with the program some nights, and I'll walk out of the living room, and one of the kids will look at me and say, "We heard you yelling a little bit, Daddy. Were you suffering a little word vomit?" Babies, sometimes it happens that way.
And also, I wanted to ask you if you had seen the email that McCain's people sent to themselves and the press got hold of after Maliki came out for Barack's timetable.
I've seen some of the stuff bouncing back and forth on that, but I haven't seen the actual email, no.
Basically, what was really fun was one sentence out of it. We're effed.
We're effed?
As in?
Yeah, mm-hmm. We are copulated upon.
Yeah.
We're intercoursed.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I gathered that
But now the phone call's been made, and Maliki, they're saying, you know, Allie, maybe backing off a little bit, and blah, 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 and there was a thing about the translator, and, you know, maybe you got the translation wrong, and and what it means is the red bat phone in the Maliki bat cave has rung, and the little guy with the buggy eyes, the beady little, the rat-like eyes, and the jug ears, and the pea brain, and, Maliki, you listen here. You pull that back. You do not agree with him. You agree with a good Christian man like John McCain. You know that's how it works. And if not,
yeah.
And if not, you know, if not the Dunderprez, then somebody underneath him. You know, but I'm sure there's another phone in Baghdad that when it rings, the ringtone is the Darth Vader dum dum da dum dum da dum dum da 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 da. And that, you know, that, and that's when Dick Cheney, Maliki, listen here. You're not going to be running around agreeing with.
Well, what we thought, what everybody
Barack
is
Obama.
On the blogosphere is finding really interesting is this so-called translation error correction.
Yeah.
Do you know where it's coming from?
I assume the right wing because there's.
Sitcom.
charming. Yeah, the guys that it turns out have been spending anti-terrorism funding money developing. Did you see this, Susan? I just about wanted to eat dirt and run rabbits when I did. I ran across it over at WD40.com. Our anti-terrorism dollars have been going to design luxury pods for our generals.
I'm not the least bit surprised.
And what they are is they are command capsules. No, I'm sorry, they're called comfort capsules.
Oh, good grief.
Comfort capsules. And they get installed and, I guess, bolted down in military aircraft so that the generals don't have to sit there and you know, rub elbows with the lower officers and stuff. These are comfort capsules. Enclosed that go into the freight cargo bay of, you know, like a C-130 or something.
Yeah.
Leather chairs, beautiful solid wood desks, those cute little halogen lights on the gooseneck thingies. Oh, the chairs recline. You know, I can't help remembering, you know, these are called comfort capsules, right? I can't help recalling that during World War II, when the Korean people were enslaved by the Empire of Japan, many Korean women were abducted into essentially sexual slavery, and they were called comfort women.
Yeah.
So comfort capsules, comfort women. I got to wonder what else those leather-covered Barca loungers do.
And I think... You popped back into World War II, so did I. Can you really see Omar Bradley going for something like this?
And, you know, that's where I went too, Susan. You know, George Patton.
Oh, God, he'd have a hammer.
George Patton was crazier than a sprayed roach, but no. I mean, he put up in palaces around Europe and stuff like that. But no, this is a little bit much. And apparently it's causing some real flack with the lower brass and the enlisted folks in the Air Force. But again, this is the Air Force, and this is the wing of the military that has been more proselytized by the prosperity gospel and the right-wing religion industry than any other. So they probably think that Jesus wants them to have a Magic Fingers Barca lounger on the C-130.
Well, my only hope is that come January 20th, the new commander proceeds to instruct them in their constitutional duties as per the civilian control of the military.
Well, this has been 3 years in the making, Susan. This is one of those where you read down a little bit and you go, wait a minute, okay, it says it's the Washington Post, but No, come on. There's got to be an onion link on here somewhere. They've been working on these comfort capsules for 3 years. At least four top generals have been wrapped up in designing the darn things, down to the color of the capsule's carpet and the design of the leather Barca loungers. Now, it gets even more fun because here's the design spec. It must be, and this is a quote, aesthetically pleasing and furnished to reflect the rank of the senior leaders using the capsule. And, yeah, that includes beds, a couch, a table, a 37-inch flat-screen monitor with stereo speakers, the Barca loungers, and this is the fun part. This really tells you where it's coming from. A full-length mirror. Oh, I do look so general today.
Yeah.
I got a little spot on one of my stars. Just a minute here. Wet my thumb with my tongue. Yeah, okay, it's sparkling again now. Praise Jesus.
God.
Yeah, full-length mirror.
As far as I'm concerned, any staff officer who has a hand in designing these things, that is prima facie evidence of their unfitness for command.
Oh, but we're not done. We're not done. I'm just throwing out some of the initial goodies. They wanted to change this color of the seats and the pockets. Okay, they didn't like the seat color, Susan. The seat color.
Oh, God.
And that cost you and me, changing the color of the seats and the pockets, that cost us $68,240.
And this is fighting terrorism how?
It beats the heck out of me, but all the money for it, $16.2 million to date, has been sucked out of the GWAT fund, the Global War on Terrorism.
Yeah, the GWAT.
And $331,000 was taken from counterterrorism funds to cover a cost overrun on the comfort capsules. The cost overrun came from changing the color of the chairs, at least in part. World-class accommodations exceeding the standards of a regular business class flight. An anonymous officer says, I was asked by a General Robert H. McMahon what it would take to make the capsule a world-class piece of equipment. He said he wanted an assurance that we would be getting a world-class item this week. You know, I think about soldiers out there
who don't have armor.
Who went to war with flimsy unarmored Humvees. Who were shorted things like water in 120 degree heat and served rotten vegetables and rotting bloody meat by Kellogg, Byrne and Loot and Halliburton. And I see this.
And I see red.
Sure. Or, you know, how about the soldiers who will commit suicide by cop? Or the ones who will just kill themselves outright because there wasn't sufficient money to address their PTSD problems? What about them? You know, I rather like that sort of elephant hide gray that we had going on the chairs. But, you know, there were some in the group that said they preferred zebra stripes. I don't know. I think we need to change back to the elephant hide gray, don't you? I mean, it's only going to cost us $70,000 to do it. I mean, that's getting away cheap. Yes, comfort capsule.
Say something, but I could say something, but it would not be printable.
The thing goes all the way back to 2006, Susan. This is just precious. Air Force General Duncan J. McNabb Lord, it sounds like he sounds like a cartoon character. Set up the way, General Duncan J. McNabb, set up the Wayback Machine. No. He decided that the existing seats on transports, and they're the same kind of seats. It's not like, you know, a little bumpy little bench on the side of it. No. Like in some sort of an old Goonie Bird or, you know, C-47 or whatever. No. These are the same kind of seats that are on commercial airliners. But General Duncan J. McNabb said that may be fine for airmen and troops, but it wasn't good enough for the top brass.
It wasn't good enough for their exalted asses? Give me a break. The crap comes out of that end just like everybody else's.
Well, that was a little graphic now, wasn't it? But,
well,
yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm starting to get really ticked here.
Yeah, well, it just, it gets, we were going to get 10 of the capsules. They were for use by four-star generals, fleet admirals, and federal officials at the level of assistant secretary and above. General McMahon said, well, it's not opulent, and it's not a box.
It's opulent.
Yeah. 37-inch flat-screen monitor, full-length mirror. Oh, by the way, these were called, the formal name, they were SLICS. You know how it is with the military and acronyms? These are SLICS. Mm-hmm. SLICS. Senior Leader in Transit Comfort Capsules.
Oh, give me a break.
They're 18 feet by 9 feet. One of them's been partially completed. But now the program's been downsized from 10 capsules to only 3. Plus four plane pallets that are just fitted with the Magic Fingers Barca loungers. And those are called SLIPS, Senior Leader in Transit Pallets, as in, General, your slip is showing.
There shouldn't be any. They ought to scrap the whole thing. On a lighter note.
Yes.
According to the Hill's blog briefing room, McCain has more than $1 million in credit card debt.
Oh, the Cindy spends that much a month.
Well, Cindy's got the beer distributorship to finance it.
And he gets nearly $2,000 worth of disgraceful Social Security a month, too. That's out now. Did you see that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the whole Social Security is a disgrace, but he keeps cashing the checks. That 894, you just can't beat him now, can you?
Yeah, what really ticks me off is my husband is quite a bit older than he is, but he gets less Social Security.
Well, he's probably in the notch, isn't he?
Yep.
Thought so. Hell of a notch, that notch. But why can't it? Does he spend it? Does 894 spend it? What does he do with it? Does he go and play craps with it? Is that his gambling pin money for the month?
I wouldn't be a bit surprised. I know he's got a dilly of a thing for playing craps.
Yeah, craps. No, I like to play again. The craps, roulette wheels, red, no, black. Oh. Wrong again. Yeah, that never got me either. But I don't get Vegas. I don't get Atlantic City. I don't get Tunica or Biloxi or any. I just don't get it. That's not to say other people shouldn't enjoy it. I personally don't comprehend it.
Yeah, I'm one of those people that I would only be in favor of gambling if I was the one that owned the casino, because that's the only way you can win.
Right. The house wins, sure. Now, back in my bad old days of bachelorhood and stuff, we had a Thursday night poker game. And four or five of us would get together, and it was dealer's choice, and somebody'd bring the cigars, and somebody'd bring the bottle of booze, and it was a darn fine time. And you get the, you get that beautiful patter that you get around a poker table. And Jesus, is it in the hand? This is the foot. You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And that was a blast.
And you weren't playing for heavy duty money. You were playing for the penny ante, probably.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, I mean, you could go home with $50 to the good, or you could go home in a $50 hole.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this was a long time ago.
Yeah, but you are going to
those were extraordinary nights. You know, usually the worst happened to you was you were down 10 or up 10 or, you know, 20, something like that. And, you know, because it you know, you wind up with 50 cent ante and, you know, dollar max, stuff like that. And once it goes around a few times, well, pot can build up, and there are pot builder games and things like that. But it's all in good fun.
Yeah. Right.
But John McCain has a gambling problem, just like Bingo Billy Bennett has a gambling problem. You know,
another reason I don't want him elected is because not only do I not want somebody with his temper near the launch coach, I don't want somebody with his gambling problem near the Treasury.
Or near Wall Street.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine where Social Security would be today? All those piratized accounts that Dear Leader said he was I've won the election. I'm gonna spend my political capital fixing Social Security. Do you remember that, Susan? I remember that. That was what, January, February 2005.
All of that would be gone, and then their safety net would be gone too.
Yeah. And they would be telling. But see, you know, I'll give McCain this much, Susan. I'll give him this much. Social Security is a disgrace. Social Security is a disgrace because we don't take it seriously anymore. Social Security is a disgrace because it doesn't kick in for people at 55.
Yeah.
Social Security is a disgrace because by the time I get around to collecting it, I'm going to have to work till I'm 92 to collect $3.55 a month. That's why Social Security is a disgrace. Social Security is a disgrace because we give a pass to the richest Americans and tell them we're going to send them a check, you know, the 894s of the world. We're going to send them a check, but we're not going to tax them on it. We're not going to ask them to contribute above the $80,000 mark.
Yeah, that's my gripe, too.
But we darn sure, as I've noted before, we darn sure don't. We've got a ceiling for it, but we don't have a floor. And frankly, you know, 65, okay, 60. I mean, we should be looking at ways to make it better, not looking at it from the perspective that, well, you know, it's going to collapse someday and blah, blah, blah. The only reason Social Security could ever be in any danger whatsoever is because right-wing politicians sap the political will from the American people to take care of itself. Because that's what Social Security is. It's just us taking care of ourselves.
Yeah. Some fun news. You know, Obama's supposed problem with working class people in the Rust Belt and such. He's up by 8 points in Ohio.
Really?
Public policy polling survey shows Obama with solid 48-40 lead.
See, I'm loath to take any poll too terribly serious at this point in time.
Well, if they all start going that way, that's when I start smiling.
Well, you know, we've got people who listen to this program who swear that John McCain will not be the right-wing Republican nominee for the presidency. And if he is completely in the toilet by Republican National Committee time, you know, he's decided to spend more time with his family. Boom.
Yeah.
And
or my cancer's come back.
Or, well, no. No, this is these are the United Soviet States of America, and we don't say things like that about our political leaders. You know, they get the Yuri Andropov treatment instead. Oh, he's gone to spend time in his dacha.
Yeah, the gulag.
Right. So along comes Jebby, or Huxterby, or the Willard. Now, there may yet be a little bit of excitement because, like I said,
yeah.
You know, these polling numbers could go completely in the toilet between now, you know, and that email may be true that you mentioned, you know, we're intercoursed.
Yep. But, you know, I will take my grins as I can get them.
Absolutely. And enjoy them all the way. Because you and me, we don't have slicks and slips to travel around in.
Oh yeah, that's true.
We got to take our fun where we can find it. Yeah, I'm still sitting here just looking in slack-jawed wonder at the details on these damn things. It's just amazing. The estimated cost on this thing, just to finish filling it, $20 million.
Oh my.
Yeah, they have the slicks have to have aesthetically pleasing wall treatments and coverings. They also have to have footrests and a DVD player for the 37-inch flat-screen monitor. The specs on the beds, here's the fun part. I think they've been listening to right-wing radio at the Pentagon. In fact, I know they have. Because they've been listening to the Swedish mattresses you can drop a bowling ball on and then suck it up with the vacuum cleaner ads. Because the beds have to be able to support a man, quote, with no more than 50% compression of the mattress material. The seats are just, and this is bureaucraties, this is somebody's engineering degree going seriously to waste. The seats are to swivel such that, quote, the longitudinal axis of the seat is parallel to the longitudinal axis of the aircraft, regardless of where the capsules are facing. Some engineer out there is going to translate that into English for me any minute now, but I think it means they have to turn all the way around.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. I'm surprised that they didn't have, you know, the NASCAR steering wheel Game Boy or PS. I bet you, if you dug in there far enough, you'd find there was some sort of industrial military grade PS3 or Nintendo or Xbox 360, whatever, installed on every one. My favorite is World of Warcraft. I go by the handle General Nukem.
Well, Diablo 3 is coming out soon, so I ought to be happy.
Hey, Susan, you have a wonderful evening. Thanks for kickstarting stuff for me tonight.
Love to Agnes and the kids.
Absolutely. Hey to Donald.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. You know it. 37-inch flat screen, DVD player, come on. There's a zircon-encrusted, chromium-plated, titanium-encased Xbox 360 Elite under every one of those seats. You know it! And some of those generals playing DOA Extreme Beach Volleyball or some such. I'm going to get her the pink bikini. Oh, God. Let's see. Let's keep it rolling. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hey, Juanita, how are you?
I'm pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm just loving the idea of a bunch of Air Force generals playing extreme beach volleyball.
I want to know if you had the 10 minutes to spare to listen to The View.
Oh, go.
I sent you.
Yeah, I did.
Well, apparently it made a big thing out of it. And this morning, Barbara was on there, and she said, we all love each other. We just discuss things. Sometimes we get very emotional, but it doesn't mean anything. You know, it just, we respect one another's opinions and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, wouldn't you love for Whoopi to be sitting there going, I don't, not hers. No, no, over there on the end, she's an idiot. Did I lose you?
No, I thought I lost you.
No, I've been here all along.
Do you see much on the internet, on the TV, about Barack's trip?
There's been a lot of talk about it, but I don't get any television worth speaking of. My only news channel at this point is Fox.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I just have the local and.
But there's been a lot of coverage, and in fact, the networks are following him and covering him, and yeah, it's a big deal.
Oh, I think it is. I'm kind of excited about it, you know, because I think a lot of people are going to be jealous.
Well, it certainly worked in one regard, and this is another one that I got in the stack, Juanita. It worked insofar as it suckered John McCain into coming out and proving once again what a foreign policy genius he isn't.
Yeah. And he's going to actual places. He even actually ate a meal with the soldiers. You know.
Mm-hmm. But John, you saw that, didn't you, Juanita? John McCain came out and said he was terribly, terribly concerned about the tensions on the Iraq-Pakistan border.
Oh, I don't think they're close to each other, are they?
They don't have a border.
That's what I thought.
No, not even a little bit. No, none.
I hear him say a lot. That I do see that off and on. I hope they're making a film of his trip, because I would love to see it. No, they won't be showing it on.
Well, I'm sure, no, all three major networks are following him, so I'm sure there'll be footage tonight, maybe even as we speak right now, or maybe on Chicken Noodle News or something during the time that they're not running Glenn Beck. Maybe that's why they did the Glenn Beck thing this evening, to keep from having to cover Barack Obama's trip to the Middle East.
Yeah, they have it a little bit, and a little bit on local TV, but like I'm on the regular channels, you know, the corporate news media.
Mm-hmm.
But, like I said, I don't get that now. I just have
over the air
antenna.
Right, right.
So I get local stuff.
Which
sometimes.
Yeah, which limit, which then.
They don't come through.
Right, which then in turn limits you.
But you know what? I used to have Time Warner, then I had a Dish, and it just kept going up and up and up and up and up. And so I decided that I didn't watch that much TV, and, you know, some great programs on, but I can get a lot of stuff on the Internet.
Well, that's the truth. You really can. And hopefully. Well, hopefully that'll increase in, as opposed to decreasing.
Yeah.
There's going to be more and more content on the inner tubes.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the curse of the printed newspaper, and the buggy whip over-the-air media right now is trying to figure out how they compete. That's why they have such hissies, and they're suing YouTube, and they're all upset, and blah, 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 blah. That's what's going on, because These people are getting the for-profit media in the old buggy whip broadcast industry. They're getting their lunch eaten. And instead of what changing with the times, they want instead to make time stand still, and hence the RIAA lawsuits and MPAA lawsuits and broadcast media suing YouTube and stuff like that. You know,
mm-hmm.
Rather than go forward, they want to stand still and make everybody go backwards. Although George Bush today said, or in the last couple of days, said he's heard of the YouTube.
It is.
Yeah, we learned a couple of years ago that he knows how to use the Google, and he was at a fundraiser in Tucson for 894. And he asked them to start turn off their recording devices because he has heard of the YouTube. I don't know a lot about these internets, but I have heard of the YouTube.
Oh, Lord, please relieve us.
I know. What, 6 months? 6 months? 6 months and change. 5 months and change.
Boy, they.
Yeah, exactly. That's what that word's for, exactly. Just that moment. Oi! Yeah. Yeah.
It really, I'll tell you, it's just. Wears you. This just wears you out. Sometimes, if you think about it, there's the old song that goes with a little deep thinking. I might start a drinking.
Yeah.
You know, it's just you think maybe we're taking some steps forward, and we've get pushed back down into the hole or the pit or whatever this is.
Well, there are people who work to keep us in it.
Oh, yeah.
We work to get out. They work to keep us in.
Yeah, that's right. Now, I see on Buzzflash that Al Gore is getting attacked.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, yeah, for showing up at Netroots Nation.
10 years, uh-huh. I wish we could do it quicker than that.
I would, well, I'd be happy with 10 years.
I know, yeah. But it would be nice if they could start. They could start now. But that would be good, something to help people.
Sure, and to help people get off the grid, to help people stop burning coal, to help people stop burning oil. One of the things that came, you know, he showed up. It was a surprise appearance at Netroots Nation, which used to be called Yearly Coast, but Netroots Nation. It was held down in Austin. Our blogger Texas Betsy was there. Rick Goodner, our horn psychotherapist, was there. And Gore showed up and gave an inspiring speech. And of course, the right wing just had a purple polka dotted blue scream and hissy about it. O'Reilly's head was fit to explode, Juanita. So, you know, there you go. But next year, as a matter of fact, next year, Netroots Nation is going to be held in Pittsburgh, one of my favorite cities. And they're holding it there partially because of how green Pittsburgh is making itself. And that's a real turnaround, too, because, you know, Pittsburgh was there. I've seen photos of Pittsburgh in the 30s and 40s, especially during the war years when the steel mill output was so high. And high noon in Pittsburgh looked like 9 o'clock at night. It was so dark and smoky.
Really?
And now it's a beautiful town. They're taking green ideas seriously.
Yeah.
And they're reducing their carbon footprint. And it's really exciting to see that Netroots Nation is going to go there. I hope maybe we can be there next year.
Yeah.
In fact, I've already mentioned that to them.
We've got to start. You got to start doing it.
Yeah. What's that old saying? The journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step. And it's not you taking the step, Juanita, and it's not me taking the step. We're willing to take the step.
Right.
It's the old worn out thinking backwards, stand still, the right wing energy thugs that want us to. Do you realize what this means, Juanita? It means that the oil industry and the coal industry and the old-style power grid industry would prefer to actively let America be harmed and maybe even collapse as opposed to standing with us and making things better.
Right. That's right. And, you know, because they could, but
and that says, that says a mouthful, doesn't it?
Yeah, and they're just full of greed. You know, anybody that can't care about somebody else that's in distress. You have somebody, a program, I don't know if it's new or what, but he was living out in the park or something as a homeless, and he was interviewing homeless people. It was on this morning and last night.
Oh, you're talking about Rick Smith?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was really good.
Oh, Rick is a dandy. He's
It was really good. And he, you know, let them tell, you know, that could happen. Like you said, that could happen to anybody. Even some of these highfalutin people, you know, that think that.
The highfalutin people always have the working class of America to fall back on. You know, there was the Bear Stearns CEO. He'd driven his company into the ground, and there we were, you and me and hardworking America, and we just said, here, we can't stand to see for you you have hard times. Let us make it all better for you. Tell us if the hummingbird tongue canapé still tastes as good. That's us.
Yep.
Welfare for them, workfare for us.
Right. Yep. They've been taking so much welfare for so long, they don't have anything to help anybody with, I guess. Or they don't try.
Yeah.
But what about McCain's big deal, Social Security? $1,930 a month, nearly $2,000. Plus he gets all of his, all of his meds paid. Yes, the finest is a lot better than Medicare, what he gets from the Senate.
Right, but you can't ask him why that's too good for the rest of the American people, because he'll tell you, as he has in the past, well, see, I was a prisoner of war.
Yeah.
As if that somehow, and you know what, it probably does entitle him to lifetime care, but you know what, getting up every day and carrying this country on your back entitles you to lifetime care, too.
Right.
But I'm just, you know, I guess I'm just mean that way.
I got an email today from the local Democratic Party.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, they're asking for people, they're going to bring a bunch of people down to work for Obama, and they're asking for people to put them up, you know, to save money that way.
Right.
I think that's a neat idea. And they're starting. I think that's great. It's going to be in all the states.
I hope it is in all the states, and I hope people just.
I think they will. I believe they will.
I'd like to see him win. Naturally, I want to see him win the general election, but I want to see him win the general election and carry some places that he's not supposed to carry.
Oh no! Yeah.
You know, see him carry Louisiana or Texas or Mississippi or Alabama would be so gratifying.
He's a Republican for vice president.
Oh, no. That cannot happen. That must not happen.
And also, I don't want that Birch Bayh.
Evan Bayh, you mean? Evan?
Oh, Blue Dog Blue.
Yeah, Evan Bayh, yeah. Yeah, no Chuck Hagel, no Evan Bayh, no Joe Lieberman, no Sam Nunn. Sam Nunn is unacceptable.
No, I don't him.
I like Jack Reed a lot. You know, the thing that Jack Reed's got going against him is that he comes from a little itsy bitsy state.
Yeah.
Rhode Island. But the guy has got all the credentials in the world to be a vice president.
Yeah.
Or a president. And that's
who?
Or a president, and that's what you look for in a vice president, is somebody that can step into your shoes.
Kind of like a Truman, like, in a way, you know.
Yeah, I do. And then, you know, choosing a vice presidential running mate's got to be a little bit daunting, because when you choose your vice president, one of the things that has to be thought of, you have to ponder your own mortality.
Yeah.
I'm choosing a guy that I think will be okay as a president of the United States if I should kick the bucket.
Right.
And that's got to just kind of scare you. Not scare you, but it pause for reflection, you bet.
And I even heard they were talking about Powell.
Oh, not Mr. My friends, this is all verified information. Go to the UN, lie your rotten butt off, pal. No. That's...
Boy, it would knock me for a loop, I'll tell you.
The more I've studied Jack Reed, the more I like him. It would make real good policy sense. I mean, the guy's a decorated veteran. He's got enough military credentials to stand up to a McCain type, and he doesn't have the baggage that, say, General Wesley Clark has.
Well, you know, he's on that trip. I don't know if he's going all the places, but him and Hagel are on that trip.
Right. That was my understanding. Well, Juanita, I got to run along, but good talking to you. And wow, a bunch of topics you've brought for us to consider tonight.
Okay, you take care.
All right, and bye now.
Night-night.
That's our pal Juanita and View correspondent Juanita. And I'll tell you what we're going to do. Wait a minute. Just a couple of emails. First of all, the national top news stories, as brought to you by our pal Cindy in the Great Northwest. ABC's top news story, peppers have E. coli. CBS's top news story, salmonella linked to jalapenos. And NBC's top news story, Las Vegas is having a hard time luring customers. Just another dull day in America when the most dangerous thing facing us is spicy vegetables. Yeah. She also says $68,000 for a fabric change. Jeez, Bob, what does it do? Titillate his testicles while he sits there? There's a joke in there somewhere, and yeah. Meanwhile, yeah, she also wonders if those contracts with Hannity and Flimball and so forth have escape clauses should the company go broke for lack of listeners. And the problem is, you can never go broke underestimating the American people or their tastes. So they don't have, they know the money's there. They know that they're going to have 5 million people a day, and out of a number like 5 million, there are enough rubes to order the Swedish mattress that you can drop a bowling ball on and then suck up with the vacuum cleaner that'll pick up a bowling ball while rubbing your balding little head with an herbal baldness concoction. There's just that many people inside statistically 5 or 8 or 10 million people. And remember, when the Savage Wiener says that autism's all a racket, there are people all over this country say, yep, sure is. I know that because I don't have an autistic kid. Whoosh. And as far as the capsules are concerned, the comfort capsules, just asking, David wants to know, do the dead ones coming home get the same recliner and choice of carpet color? I'm guessing that the answer is no. And just the last couple of details for you out of the comfort capsule story. I want you to have it all so you can really just sort of let the disgust flow over you like not like a mighty river, but like a mighty polluted river, like a river of maybe coal waste slurry sludge. They tried to change the name from comfort capsules and crossed it out in repeated memos, crossing out comfort and changing it to conference in the slick. Conference capsule. Golly, Ned. And let's see, General McMahon. The leather and carpet color choices were made by General McNabb. General McMahon ordered that the seats be recovered. And then one email complains about the contractor not swapping out the brown seat belts for the replacement blue seat belts. The changes delayed the program by months and added to its cost. Everything adds to its cost. General McMahon, however, is suffering from memory problems. He doesn't recall intervening on the leather color change. He said he was sure it was unrelated to the Air Force's color. It was probably because blue would not show dirt as much as tan or brown would. How are they at showing blood, General? I mean, just asking. Oh, wait. You're precisely what those are. You're an armchair general. You're not a fighting general. You're an airplane flying general. You're a general who sits in a Magic Fingers Barca lounger in front of a 37-inch flat screen monitor while viewing yourself through the full-size mirror and adjusting your ribbons. You're that kind of general, aren't you, General? Not the kind that actually gets down there with his men and women and tries to fight and win the war. You just sit around thinking about the war a lot, don't you, General? Yeah, we know your type, General. We know your type pretty doggone well. Because we've seen it before, and we've heard it before. Yeah, we know exactly what kind of general you are. And it's sad. Because you couldn't hold the boots of Thomas J. Jackson, or Robert E. Lee, or even Ulysses Grant, or William Tecumseh Sherman. No, no. You wouldn't be fit to march with the men who marched in the Battle of Chapultepec, even though that war was wrong. No, I don't think so. You're not that kind of general. You're a chicken hawk general. Blue would not show dirt as much as tan or brown would.
Oh, God!
Well, let's go to the phones. Never mind the break. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, brother.
Hey, what's up, Albert?
Yeah, you know, you sound actually pretty positive today. I should just say, you know, I didn't catch what that capsule stuff was. I was at the pool, but my Lord.
Oh, were you lounging by the pool, were you?
Yeah, well, the community pool.
Cabana boy!
Yeah, well, gotta use the pool before it becomes a slurry pit, so.
Amen to that. We've got a little pool over at the 4-H grounds, and I'm just grateful that the county still has money to fill it up every summer.
Yeah, me too. It's a nice little thing for the kids, and finally. Yeah, it still costs money. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
So what is this capsule? What is this?
It's a comfort capsule, Albert.
For what?
It is for the comfort of generals as they fly around the world being generally generalish. And it's so that they don't have to sit there in, you know, the old business class airline seats that the lower brass has to sit in. I mean, you don't spend a career in the Air Force just so you can sit there with a bunch of bird colonels. You've made general. You want a comfort capsule that can be bolted into the back of the cargo bay of a transport plane and whose seats will swivel through 360 degrees and always point in the direction of the nose of the aircraft with matching seat belts and a 37-inch flat-screen monitor and a titanium-encrusted, zircon-encrusted Xbox 360 and the footrests and massagers and magic fingers and little trays so you can have your sushi in flight. You know, that.
Mm-hmm. That sounds fun. Yeah, I mean, when I hear that, I think of the little capsule that was in Air Force One that we were witness to in Escape New York. I wonder if it's that kind of thing. and that's another thing that always just blows my mind. It just blows my mind when they sit there and they talk about how liberals, you know, they want to kill the military. And it's like, you know, half of the crap that we spend our money on is totally worthless, and just like matching seat, right? What is this leather? What is this stuff that they, you know, and I understand, you know, I was in the military, you know that, and I understand why they have better rooms than we did, and, you know, they ate better food than we did, to a degree, I can understand, but then it gets to that point where they start changing all them rules, and it's like, you know, animals can't sleep in beds with sheets. And they start doing things along that nature that they're real swine just pours through. I mean, how much money was this? And I'm sure, you know, they sit there and they switch this and that and match.
No. This was money from counterterrorism.
Well, yeah. Well, it's a big scam. Everybody knows that. I mean, come on. You know this counterterrorism war.
Changing the upholstery color cost $68,000.
Huh. I wonder how many body armors that would have purchased, or, you know, how much rehabilitation in a mental, somebody traumatized by one of these IEDs that we failed to secure, you know, all the explosives we failed to secure after the war was over. It's just, you know.
You know, I wonder how many psychologists the comfort capsule cost would pay for to keep people who were in heroic photos from huffing aerosol themselves to death.
Yeah, no doubt. I wonder. I mean, it's at least a couple years.
But these people are totally divorced from reality. I got an email from our buddy Cossack, and he said, isn't it odd? General Jimmy Stewart never flew in a comfort capsule while flying his B-17 over Europe.
Mm-hmm.
We used to have real generals. Sigh.
Yeah.
Yeah, General Jimmy Stewart. How about I don't think there were any comfort capsules for Ted Williams. There weren't any comfort capsules for, oh, come on, let's try another one. How about George McGovern? Or a comfort capsule for even Andy Rooney?
Or even for Poppy Bush?
Nope. He had a comfort raft, though. But there was only room for one. The other three guys in that plane were on their own.
Well, you got to protect the project. But you know how that is. It's just outrageous. It's totally outrageous. And I would still really, really love to hear where the missing $2.3 trillion went that Donald Rumsfeld announced on September 10th of 2001. That's one explanation I'd really love to hear
I don't know. It may all tie together. I just got an inquiry via email. General McMahon, Ed's brother? That's where we got the money for the comfort capsules. You may already be a winner.
Yeah, that's why I never won, I guess. Oh, boy. You know, but you sound positive today. I just got to say that. Something must have good happened to you this weekend.
No, I just had a nice relaxing weekend of sitting around and thinking about all the things that I need to have go right tomorrow and the next day in order to make these little remotes happen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually kind of scatterbrained is what it is. So
it suits you.
Well, you know, Dippy and Blonde, it's always worked.
There you go. Because, you know, it is important also to have a positive mental outlook on things, and because you are noticing that things are changing. You know what? You were mentioning something regarding Philadelphia or one of those towns that, you know.
Oh, Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh.
Yeah, don't ever. But you probably know this. Don't ever let a Philadelphian or a Pittsburgher know that you've compared or confused the two towns. It will come to blows in a hurry.
I'm sorry. That's, you know.
I mean, it's Pittsburgh's and the Penn. It's Pittsburgh and the Pens and the Steelers. Or it's Philly and the Eagles and the Flyers.
Sure.
And the Phils. And,
yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Nah, still. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good thing, you know. I never would have thought to hear Pittsburgh was going green.
Oh, Pittsburgh's a gorgeous place. It's one of my favorite cities in America, bar none.
Really?
The view alone, when you pop out of those Mount Washington tunnels, and you are at eye level with the top of the PPG building and the top of the U.S. Steel building. And all of that confluence of the Allegheny and Monongahela forming the Ohio are all just laid out before, you know, underneath you. You know, that's what, there's no more gorgeous view of a city in this country, period. Any of them. I dare anybody. It's exquisite. And just the arts thing they got going on, they got a world-class zoo happening there. They got some great brewing going on. They got a. I think it's still up and running. You could probably use the Google and find it. There's a cathedral that was converted, deconsecrated, I guess. Although if you're gonna turn an old cathedral into a brewery, you're actually consecrating it more than it's ever been consecrated before. But that's me. They brew these wonderful, wonderful beers. There's world class entertainment, and then you know at the end of the day, there's Primanti Brothers. And oh my God, Albert, Primanti Brothers. This little sandwich joint down in the Strip District, where this thick Italian bread and the beautiful meats and, you know, the pastrami's and but I prefer the thinly sliced ribeye. And they put this vinaigrette slaw on the salad, on the sandwich, along with some homemade fresh cut French fries. It all goes on the sandwich. Did I say salad? It goes on the sandwich, and then I have them toasted a little bit on the grill, and that with about a 32.1 degree long neck Iron City beer. Oh, yeah.
So I'll take a road trip when your diet's done.
No, it's just it's a magic place, and the whole Strip District and the Market District and And then, you know, God knows, I hope if I get to do it next year, and maybe the Bucks will be in town, catch a game, because PNC Park is one of the prettiest ballparks in the country. Some of the best cheap seats you ever sat in your life.
And, that's awesome.
Yeah. And again, a lot of green footprint stuff, really working hard with the carbon offsets. The convention center where it's going to be held is green. There's local rapid rail transit to and from. Oh, it's terribly exciting.
Good. That is exciting. Because you totally enlightened me on this. I had no idea that's how it was, but you know, that makes me feel a little better. It makes me feel less lonely. It also kind of boosted some of my arguments. I mean, but you know,
there are pockets of people who there are pockets of people and pockets of communities that are really taking this seriously.
Yeah.
It's getting the people who don't want to be part of the solution out of the way.
Yep.
You know, lead, follower, get out of the way. We'll fix it, but you just have to, you know, to say to the pig lickins and the right wingers, we're more than happy to fix it, but you're just going to have to shut the hell up for a while.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's definitely cutting edge, because that's, you know, I want you to see, you know, I want you specifically, I want you to keep that positive outlook and sit there and look at that, because that's what's going to happen. You know, it's only going to get worse, and when it only gets worse, they're going to be looking to the people that still, you know, it's like the little ant story or the mouse story, you know. There's one ant or one mouse that goes off and he gets all this cheese and he packs his little store. And essentially, turning your community green is essentially the same thing. You're securing energy futures for future generation. And because you're doing that, you'll have light when other people don't. And then, well, there's only one place to look. What did they do that was so successful? You know, I mean, and that's, you know, that's fundamental law of nature. That's just, you know, that's how everybody learns how to, that's how Emo the monkey teaches all the other monkeys to watch the sweet potatoes. It really is. And that's what's going to happen, Bob. I want you to have, if you have faith in nothing else, have faith in that, you know, that is going to happen. And honestly, I do have mixed feelings when it comes to Al Gore, but, you know, and I do like him when he gets his fiery speeches. Jeez, I wish he would have did that years and years and years ago.
But you know what? You have to go to the mountain to be able to come back down. And at the time that you wish Al Gore had been doing that, he had not been to the mountain.
Mm-mm. No, he was just like all the others.
I mean, it's like it's something, you know, these lectures that I'm going to be hopefully covering if the planets can align and I stand on one leg with one arm in the air and hold my tongue this so and you. If all of that works out, we're going to have two straight nights of hearing David K. Johnston, who is one of the smartest financial, well, not a financial mind, but able to translate financial gobbledygook into English that you and me can get.
Yeah.
We're going to have him talking to the Horn audience for, you know, two straight nights. But something special is going to happen for Mr. Johnston, too, Albert. And that is, I found out today that in between him lecturing in Institute, West Virginia, which is just a little bit west of Charleston, in between that and his lecture in Beckley, he is going to Cayford Mountain.
Ah.
And he is going to see mountaintop removal firsthand.
Mm-hmm.
And what reminded me of this was when I was talking about, you know, Al Gore hadn't been to the mountain yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a literal and there is a figurative application of that.
True.
And frankly, when we're talking about mountaintop removal, when you've been to the mountain, you come back a changed man, changed person. And some of that had to happen figuratively, and I think literally as well, for Al Gore.
Yeah.
Because he was bred for political service. He was trained for it, educated for it, went into it, did his best, did some great work, did some smart stuff, but only after he got screwed in 2000 and the rubber mask got pulled off of the American political and social and economic system was he able to step back and realize that the changes that need to come he couldn't have brought from the Oval Office. Now, I don't think, for my money, 9/11 doesn't happen if Al Gore's in the Oval Office. I think it's that profound a difference.
But
we're not in Iraq and we're not in Afghanistan.
But Hang on, brother. That is his the silver lining. And this is just the whole same thing when the lights go out for everybody else and those who have prepared will be the shining example. There needs to be, it's just how humans are. We just are this way. We, if things are good, people take advantage of it. That's why, even though I'm a byproduct of the welfare, you know, system as a young child, and my mother, you know, was certainly on welfare to help feed me, my brother and myself. And, you know, she put herself through school and we became, you know, middle upper class after that. You know, she married a doctor, this. So certainly I'm a success story in that respect. However, there are, you know it, there are people that milk the system. There just are. And that's how, and that's, you know, sad to say, that's a majority of it. Most people don't win the lotto and most people don't do this. But, and I think in a sense, I think, man, I can give the Bush administration this much credit because they knew that not only was this going to be a long, slugging, hard thing, so that's why they had to throw all that smoke in the beginning to just, you know, and they still do, you know, when it comes to taking pictures of family members and this funerals and, you know, really kind of even covering the story. They don't cover it like they should. I mean, this stuff should be on the news every day. Who cares? Who cares? What was the big news thing? Who cares about spicy fruit with E. coli? And thanks for the warning, but top news story of the day? I mean, you know me. I love spicy food. But we're in the minority too.
No. See, the business with the peppers. I was grocery shopping over the weekend. Kroger's had that covered. All right.
Yeah.
I was standing because I was thinking, you know, I needed it, and I was looking at the jalapenos there, and there's the warning, and it says, you know, you might not want to buy these, and I don't know why they were still on the shelves personally, but that's another thing.
Well, if you cook with them.
Yeah, and so, you know, so I eschewed those, and I was made aware, and anybody who walked through the grocery aisle of there or Wally World or any other grocery purveyor knows about that. So we can take that off the list of potential lead stories for the evening news. Because, you know, when you're going into a newscast and you realize you've already been scooped by Ralph's Superfoods, you're done.
Amen. That you are right. You are right. And that's what right back into it. I mean, when we're sitting there talking about what needs to get changed, you know, if we didn't have a 9/11, we wouldn't have had the Patriot Act go through. If we didn't have the Patriot Act go through, then a lot of people wouldn't have realized this slow creeping system, the Big Brother system. They wouldn't see this stuff coming. But now England was into it way before we were. And now you sit there and they turn around and they're like, what is this? This is getting awful, this is something we don't want. So now that's becoming an issue over there, more and more people are awake to it, and more people, because of that, they're going to be awake over here, hopefully, and, you know, these stupid things that go through, like, I was actually really hysterical. Somebody came to my door, and they were selling one of these miracle super cleaning tonics or what have you, and not that I'd purchased any, but... You know, he came in and he's sitting there and I noticed he had an accent and, you know, but he was white. And I said, you know, well, where are you from? You know, and he tells me he's from South Africa and this and this and this. I said, what happened? You came to La Crosse on vacation and stayed for probation? That's how this city keeps its population, let me tell you. But anyhow, you know, this happens and he's like, well, no, I got to stay out of trouble because if I get into trouble, they send me right back. And I'm like, well, yeah, certainly, you know, but at the same time, you know, he his skin color doesn't hurt. You know, he's been here 6 years, you know. They're going after the brown-skinned people when it comes to that. So, and he even acknowledged and kind of recognized that. And, you know, it's in a sense, like, I sometimes, why is the lead story, you know, about jalapenos? You know, and almost like, ooh, I got shades of, what's his face with the big head, melon head. He's on CNN. Lou Dobbs.
No, yeah. I saw the thing that Jon Stewart did the other night with the Dobbsometer.
Yeah.
Where you know the way you gauge the right wing outrage by how long it takes to make Lou Dobbs' head explode. Oh, it was a precious little piece of comedy. But the thing was, it wasn't necessarily comedy. There was an awful lot of truth in it.
That's what has gotten me through this period of time a lot of the ways is, you know, certainly guys like him, and it wasn't always that it was sweet. You know, I need a little bit of sour. I need a little bit of bite with my medicine. You know, I think you and I and everyone who listens to the horn and everybody else of a progressive heart, no matter what, you know, we are certainly patriotic of beyond just wearing a big flag bandana and, you know, flag boxer briefs. You know, that doesn't make you patriotic. It makes you patriotic.
Don't forget your Get a Brain Moran sign.
Amen. You know, that don't make you patriotic. What makes you patriotic is being able to love your country like a parent. You know, like a parent loves his child. And realize that, you know, there are faults there and there are things that we need to address to fix. But you still love the country. And because you love the country, that's why you can do, you know, in the child. That's why you can.
Yeah, and that's why it gets really, really irksome when you see that some Air Force general utterly divorced from reality spent $68,000 on a color change, a fabric swatch change. I got email in here saying that 68 large would have bought 130 good quality body armors.
Man.
That's 130 families that aren't shattered beyond all recognition.
Jeez.
You know, that general should be court-martialed. Honest to God.
Seriously. And not only that, they should be court-martialed for even imagining that. You know, that... You know, say what you want about the Middle Ages and, you know, the Enlightenment Age and all the wars and that they had there. But, man, at least, you know, not for nothing, Napoleon was on the field.
Yeah, and just while we're at it, the list of people who never got a comfort capsule. How about Colonel Glenn Miller never had a comfort capsule?
Nope, or Smedley Butler.
How about Pat Tillman didn't have a comfort capsule? He did come home, however, in a transfer tube.
a transfer tube. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're not even caskets anymore. They're transfer tubes.
And he has his dog tag in between his two front teeth. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Yeah, I know how that works. Yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, and that's one of those things, man. You know, every time I see, you know, I did see the gorilla. They had to have been gorilla photos of people just saying, you know what, these photos got to get out. You know, the planes with the coffins in them. You know, eight across and 30 deep. You know, when you sit there and you look at that, you know, I can't help but, you know, look in there and see and know what kind of image that was. I remember when they gave me my dog tags and they told me what happened with them. You know, I mean, that's one of those things that just sticks with you and stays with you. And that's why, you know, God, you know, nobody would want to die for a waste. And so why would you send anybody? Would you want to die for a waste? So why would you send anybody? Especially when you're going to send them from the comfort of a comfort capsule. And you're, you know, God knows what else is in the closet in that thing. But, you know, you sit there and, you know, the president, you know, man, that's why I love that Saddam Hussein idea. Saddam Hussein had the right idea here. This is my favorite thing Saddam Hussein ever did. And then he said that him and his vice president and Bush and Cheney should meet in the desert and duke it out and see what happens. And whoever wins, wins, and that's how it is. And that wouldn't have that been a pay-per-view day? What a world that would be. Not to say I want to be ruled by strong men or this or that, you know, because I certainly
steel don't. Cage death match.
But you know what? When it comes to that, when you're going to be sacrificing other people's lives and you don't even have the the tiniest of grit,
the stones to show up.
Want some? Yeah. I mean, if Bush was such a tough guy, he'd say, "Oh yeah, he wants it. Bring it here." Yeah, you know, and then
bring it on. Bring it on. Yeah.
You know, exactly. It's just ridiculous. And this is, you know, like a comfort capsule. They got, you know, $20,000 wrenches. Man, you think a wrench, I understand. Some things can be handmade, fine-tuned, and so totally precise and super strong. I understand all that. But however, these tools ain't going to space. These tools are just going to be thrown around an aircraft hangar or what have you. You know, you don't need no wrench for $12,000. You don't need no toilet seats for $1,800. And this stuff's been going on. Why does this always go on? Oh, no. That's a rhetorical. I was going to say, why does this stuff go on when Republicans are in office? But, you know.
You answered your own question. It's tough when that happens, isn't it?
I love it because it tells you that this whole thing, you know, come on. It's just amazing. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, why is it? Albert, it's like asking, why does it get messy when the hogs get their back and front feet in the trough? Because that's what hogs do.
Yeah, true, true, true. That's amazing because it's just unbelievable. You know, and they always spend us into a freaking bottomless pit. they always said they didn't do this, and so, you know, he is for hoping. He is for hoping that the next revolution happens soon. Let's hope that it's bloodless. Let's hope that it's, you know, driven by the heart and consciousness and creating technologies that we really need that are really going to, you know, putting money into developing these things, because you know they haven't been doing it. I mean, a little bit, I'm sure, here and there, but nothing like they should be doing. You know, we wasted all that effort, and you know my theory on why they don't want Iran and all these guys to have atomic weapons. You know, because there are going to be secrets that they're going to uncover. And you know that they're not going to explain that to you and me and the populace, you know, on Discovery Channel. They ain't going to sit there and tell you what they, you know. They never did show you all their cards. However, if we could sit there and dump the money that we dumped into just pursuing that aspect of our, you know, reality, man, imagine if we spent that same kind of level of money going to the next step. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the kinds of things that we need to be looking at. We need to be looking at that staircase, and we need to be taking this country and saying, we need to come, climb, let's go. Let's go, let's go, let's go. Instead of being the firemen on 9/11, we're going to be the ones telling everybody to start climbing. You know, and that's what we can, that's in a sense you...
Climb or die, climb or die, climb or die. I used to use that phrase.
Yeah.
Because there's no going backwards.
No, we can't. It just, we just don't got, you know.
You're in the desert and Pharaoh don't want you back.
True, true, true. It's, yeah, it is one of those. But I'll tell you what, you know, Barack is, I don't think it was necessary, not necessary for me, for him to go to the region, you know, just not necessary for me. I could, you know, in a way you don't want him to cover it, Bob. You know, in your heart. You don't want him to cover it because you don't want it to be, you know, you don't want him to have to cover
it. Well, I saw some of the remarks from the Puma people saying this is going to be a glaring example of his profound lack of foreign policy experience. You know, and these are people who call themselves Democrats.
Yeah.
Well, it turns, but you know, somebody out there is kind of smart. Did they know that they would goad 894 into coming out and making an idiot of himself again? Did they know that, Albert? Did they, I mean, honest to God, did they know that he would come out and redraw the borders of an entire region? Because if they did, they are really, and for God, you know, super geniuses.
Yeah.
Because this is a beautiful thing. I mean, you got to hear it. This is just too good to pass up. I'm sure you already have, but maybe everybody hasn't.
No, I haven't. I've been in La La Land.
Oh, this is rich. This is just
right.
Rich.
All right. I'm ready to laugh.
Okay, here
you
we go.
You agree the situation in Afghanistan is precarious and urgent?
Well, I think it's very serious.
Not precarious,
I mean, it's a serious situation. Oh, I don't know exactly whether run through the vocabulary, but it's a serious situation, but there's a lot of things we need to do. We have a lot of work to do, and I'm afraid that it's a very hard struggle, particularly given the situation on the Iraq-Pakistan border. And I would not announce that I'm going to attack Pakistan, as Senator Obama did when he was during his campaign.
You got that, Albert? I promise you that is 100% genuine, unfooled with audio. That's Diane. That's Diane Sawyer interviewing 894 on hit, because you know 894 is a foreign policy genius.
Yeah, he is.
And you know, especially those tensions on the Iraq-Pakistan border.
Yeah.
There's about 1,000 miles of Iran between Iraq and the Pakistan border, but that's just me.
Yeah. Tell you what.
That's just me. And you know what the McCain camp will say tomorrow if anybody bothers to bring it up. That's just McCain being McCain. That's another one of his old knee slappers.
Yeah. You know.
As he told you the story about the Pakistani bear that repeatedly rapes the woman, that's just McCain being McCain. But you know the other beautiful part of it is sweet old babe Diane Sawyer, for profit media.
Yep.
Not a word, Senator. You realize that Iraq doesn't share a border with Pakistan, don't you?
Uh-huh.
Well, it will when I'm through being president. Iraq is going to be a wonderland. Oh.
Yeah, that's his unification theory, I bet. And, of course, why would she dare? She wouldn't dare. She wouldn't dare.
No, he'd probably call her the C word.
Yeah, man, you know, and this thing, every time I can't be the only one that just, seriously, when you hear his voice, McCain's voice is so fraudulently calm that it's just so aggravating. His voice is, oh, my friends, if I talk to you like this every time I called, oh, you probably wouldn't stay on with me very long.
At least General Jack D. Ripper, as played by Sterling Hayden, at least he had that sort of command voice.
Yeah.
Mandrake.
Yeah. And I'm not even trying to be anything, you know, along that line. But come on now. It's just fake. It's just so fake. He just tried, you know, they know I have a temper, so I better be real calm. You got to be calm. You can't be showing your anger. La, 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 la. You know, and Joe Lieberman can't always be on his shoulder to whisper into his ear every time he messes, you know, he has another geopolitical success. But, you know, I mean, God, this guy is so transparent. Yeah, I'm sure Barack Obama, I'm sure they probably are genius to that level. They knew that this guy's so fraudulent. He's so easy to just, this is why Bush beat him. This is why, you know, man, they're gonna have to get Obama at a Panther meeting or something. They're really gonna have to do it in order to really get this guy.
Yeah, but 894 is fast approaching ketchup is a vegetable status.
I think he's there, but you know.
I mean, the one after another. It's like some sort of. It's become a game. It's like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon or something, where, you know, what's the latest stupid thing that McCain has said now? You know, this is, I know how to win, my friends. I know how to win wars. You know what? You know where I think that voice is coming from? You know where that voice is coming from, Albert? This is all the time that he spent hanging out with Genocidal Joe.
You're right. Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah. I just want to bomb the Iranians into submission and end the Muslim threat to the world is all. And they think if they say it in these really sleazy, smarmy, yicky, soft little tones that it'll take some of the horror and damnation out of it.
I'll tell you what, it never works for Lieberman. I mean, I tell you what, besides it being stolen and everything else, another key factor was Lieberman. You know, with Gore, that guy has aggravated me every time he says anything.
Oh, when Gore announced that he was going to be the vice presidential running mate, I had this very good buddy at the time, and I looked at him, and he looked at me, and he said, "We just lost."
Yep. Yep.
And there was truth in it. There was just truth in it.
The guy's a dead trout. I mean, that's what he is. He's got the big old lips, and he's just like, bleh, 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 bleh. And he's got this fake, like, mummified smile.
And the phony piety, and yeah, all of it.
Yeah, and he's always preaching to you. I mean, that's just how, and that's how McCain's coming off as well, and that's a good thing, too. Because that just makes my day a little bit. I can go to rest a little easier tonight. Because that's spot on, Bob. Excellent shot.
Hey, Albert, I'm going to run along, brother.
All right, brother. You take care.
All right, going to. Say hi to the girls.
Bye-bye.
Later.
Always. Say love to Agnes. Bye-bye.
All right, bye now. Our buddy Albert in Wisconsin. And let's see if this person is still here. Yes, it appears so. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Bob.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Rich from Massachusetts.
Hey, Rich, how are you?
I'm good. I met you there at Mountain Justice Weekend.
That's right. And you said you would find the nerve to call one day.
Yeah, well, this is the nerve day. I just wanted to tell you how much I really enjoyed it down there. I had a great time.
Oh, that was a great time, wasn't it?
Yeah, I got to talk some to Larry. I stayed over the night on top of the mountain.
Oh, you know what? Waking up and seeing morning on that mountain's got to be something special.
Well, the other thing that was great was seeing all those kids through the night, just entertaining up until about 4 a.m., dancing around the campfire.
Well, our buddy Michael wrote to say that the bands after Agnes and I and the kids left, that the bands were just amazing.
Oh, it was absolutely great. The thing I was most impressed about, though, is when we actually went over and looked at the devastation of the mountaintop removal. I mean, I just couldn't believe it. With the, you know, the line of demarcation from Larry's property to the coal leases was just heartbreaking.
Yeah, it is, and you come away changed, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you took a walk over there. Did you notice that? Didn't see any life on the mountain. I didn't even see birds flying.
No, not a bird.
Reconstructed area.
Yeah, no birds, no rabbits, no squirrels, no groundhogs, okay. No gophers, no nothing. Not even a buzzard.
Yeah, and it's amazing because the path you take to get over there was just so lush. I mean, that old world forest and everything. It's just that. It's a rainforest you walk through to get to that desert. It just hurt.
Have you and coming back from it? Have you felt compelled to tell people about what you saw?
Yeah, well, I took a whole bunch of pictures and I'm showing people around here. You know, we don't have any coal mining up here in New England, and we have beautiful mountains that are out in the Berkshires. I don't know if you've ever been there.
I was there just last February, as a matter of fact.
Well, they're kind of similar to the kind of mountains you have in West Virginia. You know, they're short and steep.
Exactly.
They're part of the same range, so, you know, we can see what's going on. I don't know if anybody's discovered coal under ours or not. But even so,
you know, if you go to ilovemountains.org, there's that neat little tool where you put your zip code into the box.
Right, I did that.
And no matter where you live, it'll tell you, it'll show you, you've got a connection to mountaintop removal.
Yeah, I put that in before I went down there. You know, our coal does come from Crayford for Boston Edison.
Yeah.
Yeah, I showed that to my friends, and they just had no connection between West Virginia and what's coming out of their light socket. And now they're kind of thinking about it a bit, but the pictures don't do it justice to, you know, the action.
No, when you walk out of that forested area and you make that turn and you see what's up ahead, it takes your breath away. Because there's some crummy grass growing over a pile of rocks. And, you know, that was one of the things I noticed. You can see the rocks sticking up through the grass. So, you know, nothing's ever going to be able to be farmed or grown there meaningfully.
Yeah, it didn't even look as lush as a chia plant, if you ask me.
No.
It just looked so phony. And they call that restoring the mountain. It didn't look anything like that mountain looked before.
Well, the word that I heard used, I think it was Preston in Denver who used the word, and it was so apt. It is a hellscape.
Yeah, it is. It's a pity, too, because I came in from the Cabin Creek side where my relatives live.
Mm-hmm.
I'd only been down to Cabin Creek in the spring and the fall, you know, or I guess we'd call it kind of the mud season, but down there it'd be the coal season when coal dust was all over everything. But Cabin Creek coming down there in July was just so lush and pretty and beautiful, and then you get up to the top of the mountain and see that. It just hurts.
But the beautiful thing is that, you know, with what Al Gore's been talking about lately, we can bring this to an end and we can leave the coal where it is, because the technology exists for us to get free of it. And there are benefits that come with getting free of it. Entire generations of children that don't have asthma. The mercury in the mercury that gets burned, sent into the atmosphere, and then falls back with the rain into our streams, that gets into our groundwater, and accounts for IQ deficits in children that are yet unborn. All of that goes away too.
Yeah. Well, I heard someone, I don't know if it was on your show or not, a couple of months ago, they said they had gone into one of the schools down that area. I don't know whether it was West Virginia or Kentucky. And it was an elementary school, and they walked to the principal's office down the corridor. The only sound they really seemed to hear was coughing of the kids in the classrooms. And I thought if that's true, that's a sin. You know?
Yeah, and that's not surprising. But you know, that's we try to overlook that. Because if, you know, just ask the coal companies, they'll tell you, there's no connection between the burning of coal and the burning of coal and all these childhood diseases. These things just happen. But you know, to go the these things just happen route, that means that you have to suspend your belief in provable science. And I can't do that.
Yeah, well, I was pretty impressed when I come back. And like I said, I've been showing the photos to my friends up here, and they just can't relate to it. It's the thing. You have to go down there. You have to actually see for yourself to see what's going on. And I don't know who our guide was, but the first time we went out to the mountain area, and we looked over toward the actual mountaintop removal with the big trucks and the 12-foot tires.
Yeah.
And they were telling us that the mountains in the background, before they started this, you couldn't even see them because the Cape Ford Mountain was blocking all that off. Now, you're just looking across this moonscape at another range of mountains in the background.
Right. Larry's property used to be the lowest point in all the mountains around there, and now it's the highest.
Yeah. Well, before we all went to bed, Larry came up and gave us all a nice pep talk about it. He was very elegant in his way. He's a dedicated man. Say that for him.
Oh, he is. How many acts of violence did he tell you that he's put up with?
That's why he wears that chartreuse shirt. he wants you to see him.
Yeah.
I had to put my sunglasses on when I see him in that shirt.
Yeah, it's like Blaze Orange, only even brighter. And there's not going to be any mistaking him for a deer or a turkey or anything else.
Well, that's what he said. He doesn't want no accidents, in quotes.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, but he was very elegant. He gave about a 15-minute speech before everybody, you know, started settling in for the night. And it was truly elegant, about a man that really cares about something deeply. And, the age range up on that mountain was something to see. There are people my age, you know, like 60, down to kids, you know, tots. And you were there with your whole family. But it was the full gamut, grandmas, grandkids.
Oh, it was really inspiring. And I didn't meet anybody who didn't go away from there regenerated to go and try to do something, talk more, make people more aware of what's going on. So that means it really served its purpose.
I was also quite impressed with how far some of the people had come. I was there from Florida, Tennessee, Alabama.
You were from Massachusetts. That we were impressed with you.
Well, I got relatives down there too. So, you know, my grandparents are buried over there in Montgomery. So I had to take a ride over there and stuff. So I have a connection to the area, even though I don't live there. But it was nice to get down there. It was really fun. Although my cousins must have heard that I was coming to get to the house there. God. Somebody let the word out there.
Some family.
I actually met a new relative up on top of the mountain. Dude, that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, so.
I hope you can come back.
Well, I hear they're going to do the same thing on the Memorial Day, Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, something similar, yeah. That's my understanding.
Yeah, and I was trying to get, you know, a little crew together here to go down and see it, you know. But, It's a tough stuff. I'm just going to see if I can get about some more people to come down and pitch some tents with me.
It's
kind of fun camping out there because they don't let you off the mountain after 9 o'clock, you know.
Oh no.
Those would be dangerous. So, you know, they came over and they picked your name and made sure you're going to stay there till 7. So once you commit, you commit.
Right. And the other thing I asked Larry, I said, is it much different when autumn's coming, the leaves are down? He said it changes dramatically because the nature of the view changes, because then all of a sudden you can see everything. One of the things that the whole area is wrapped around, you know, that slope going up to the Stanley Ayres Park, if you looked off to your left as you were driving up, that's all been destroyed and raped too.
Yeah. Well, I know it's going down the mountain. I don't know if you saw it or not. About halfway down the mountain, the Cabin Creek side, you go that side to go home, right?
Yeah.
Well, about halfway down the mountain, there's this big, huge, I don't know, I'd say 6 foot across pipe that just seems to be emptying into the little stream that runs beside the road down there.
Exactly.
And I'm just wondering what comes out of there. Because, you know, that stream flows down the Cabin Creek, and Cabin Creek flows down the Kanawha, and the Kanawha goes to the Ohio, et cetera.
And the same thing happens, you know, the Little Coal River and the Big Coal River come together, and they dump into the Kanawha. The Kanawha goes to the Ohio. That's why all of these mountaintop anti-mountaintop removal activists say time and again, we're all downstream.
Right, and that's what I was showing my friends and family up here. I was showing them that pipe, and then explaining where that pipe ends up, and you know, hopefully.
But then when you calculate in what the coal's going for, because most Appalachian coal is of what's called metallurgical grade.
In other words, you can make it, use it for making metal. And so most of it doesn't go for power generation. The vast majority of the this stuff is metallurgical grade, and fully half of it that's coming out of West Virginia is going to China. And China's, you know, whether it's their furnaces or their coke ovens or whatever, they don't have any environmental controls on it. So that crap gets pumped back into the air, and then it blows across the Pacific, and it lands on California and Oregon and Washington. We are all downstream. We are all downwind.
Well, I was reading something in the Boston Globe this morning that we're actually importing coal from Colombia.
Sure we are. The Drummond Coal Company of Alabama holds huge interests in Colombian coal mines, and was actively was alleged to be actively involved in the suppression of a movement to try to get basic human rights for the people mining the coal down there.
Well, that's the first thing that came to my mind when I heard Colombia. I thought of Coca-Cola and all those guys down there, how they treat union workers. And I can imagine what it's like in the coal industry. You know,
oh yeah, they just ambushed them and took them out and put put one behind the ear, and you know that was the end of the union problem.
Yeah, so I read the Blair Mountain War.
Oh yeah, Battle for Blair Mountain.
All about that. I mean, probably similar to that down in Columbia right now. That's the first thing I thought of when I read that article.
Oh, and don't think you can't get disappeared in China too. You know, China right now, the reason we're selling it to China is A, China has us by the short ones, and B, China loses between 10 and 20,000 coal miners a year. No, they don't lose them. They know exactly where they are. They're buried in the bottoms of collapsed mine shafts. Chinese coal miners die at the rate of about 10 to 20,000 per year.
Yeah, well, I'm personally not going to watch these Olympics. I just see things in the news like today that, you know, they're shutting down the factories there so they don't have the pollution during the Olympic thing. They want the blacks and Mongolians out of Peking during the Olympics. It's too strange. It's just way too strange what's going on over there.
And a long way to just plain old evil.
Yeah, we can't be involved with something like that. I'm not even going to tune it in.
No.
But, you know, anyways, like I said, it was really nice talking to you.
Well, it was great meeting you there, and it's a real pleasure to talk to you this time. And you'll notice that you survived nicely.
Well, the socks I'm playing, as I told you. I'm listening to you live and not on Memorex there.
All right. Well, good to hear from you, and I hope we will again soon.
Okay, Bob.
All right. Bye. Take care. Bye now. Love first-time callers. Rich from Massachusetts. Yeah, we got to talk a little bit up on Kayford Mountain. He usually listens to his beloved socks first and then catches the archive. That's the gorgeous thing about this media model. You know, there's a certain egotism involved with the for-profit media. No, you must tune in now, citizen, consumer. Oh, and by the way, you know how much I hate that word. I asked a question of some company. I forget which one. And I got an email back with a survey link wanting my thoughts on how they handled my customer service request. And it began, "Dear Consumer." That survey didn't end well, but, you know. So we're at the top of the third hour already. Holy smoke, where does it go? And I tell you what we're going to do. We'll take a little break, run a little musical interlude. Had something come in from our buddy Sandra. A little musical suggestion. So we're going to have a run at that. She said, how do you feel about gospel? I've attached a song for you. Let me know what you think. Well, we'll let you know. We'll all let you know what we think, Sandra. This should be nice. Yeah, this is working. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is the horn.
That's what I'm talking about. Come on, where are young people?
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Yeah, that was good. That was real good. See, you got to be with me. You got to be careful when you use a word like gospel music, because on the one hand, there's that, the Clark Sisters, and you know what? I can listen to a whole bunch of that. I can listen to about as much of that as anybody can play, right? However, gospel music covers an awful lot of ground. And it includes... Oh, you're shaking in your boots right now. I know you are. You're afraid I'm about to play Jesus, This Is Jimmy, and don't think I didn't think about it. But that's not what I'm going to do. But it also includes really tired, miserable business like this. Here we go. Squire Parsons. Sing it, Squire.
Smart Alex back at the door trying to give me a visitor's card whenever I come in, you know. Just kind of getting that subtle hint in, but it's nothing like being at home. And
yeah, he looks a little like Liberace.
It seems like the more we try to slow down, it seems like the more that things speed up on us. I'm
get to the really awful music part, Squire.
But
I'm still talking.
Down upon my knees in prayer. Was the moment a beggar became a rightful heir.
Now, see, I can't listen to that all day long. You just heard my threshold for it. It's about how long it lasts. So, we've just got to be careful with that word gospel. So, and programming note, little announcement. We're not sure if we're going to have a live Strictly Confidential this evening. Peter Godbold is once again having troubles with his internet service. Apparently there is one of the gerbils that runs on the treadmill that makes that little two-tent dented tomato cans and a string internet service of his work, which is not Peter's fault, but the crummy little company's fault. Apparently one of the gerbils got loose or something, and a 40,000-foot-high cloud passed across the sun or something like that. So he's having connectivity problems this evening, and that is one of the downsides of working on the cutting edge of broadcast technology, and that is sometimes you get cut. And that's what may have happened. But, you know, don't despair yet. If it's working at all, Peter will be here. Let's see. Some other fun stuff to veer off into. You know, I can't get over John McCain's Iraq thing and Diane Sawyer just letting him say it. But see, the problem was he didn't have Joe Lieberman there, genocidal Joe, to whisper in his ear and say, John, the border that Iraq has is with Iran. They don't have a border with Pakistan. Okay. He didn't have Lieberman there to help him out. And probably the reason that Genocidal Joe wasn't there was because Genocidal Joe is getting all worked up. Because Genocidal Joe is getting ready to go to the Queefy Conference, or Koofy, or whatever. No matter how many thousands of people, and they are thousands of people, who have implored Genocidal Joe not to go to Pastor Hagee's Koofy Conference, He's going anyway to the third annual Washington-Israel Summit of Christians United for Israel. Now, this is the organization that Pastor Hagee uses to line his own pockets without ever having to tell anybody how much is going in them, all in the name of supporting the state of Israel, which, of course, he doesn't. The Kufi conference is going to be a veritable who's who of what passes for thought in the thin gray settlings between the ears of the America's right wing. Why, there'll be Bill Kristol and Clifford May. It was Clifford May that, yeah, that was that clip with Ed Schultz, that Clifford May. Bill Kristol, Clifford May, Frank Gaffney, Daniel Pipes, you know, the guy who said that Muslims smell funny, Charles Jacobs, Dennis Prager, and, of course, Genocidal Joe. And then, let's see, Jim Loeb writes that Crystal's best buddy, Gary Bauer, as well as Iran hawk Patrick Clawson of the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, former Senator Rick Santorum, and Representatives Elliot Engel and Mike Pence are also on the agenda. Senator John McCain is not on the agenda, but that's okay because Genocidal Joe is going, and he'll tell them all how much John McCain loves Israel better than Barack Obama does. Right? Right. So, where does that leave us? Well, it leaves us, at the very least, with a certain amount of required education. And that is to let people know exactly what John Hagee is all about. And so far, John Hagee's lawyers have not been able to intimidate a group called Jews on First. Jews on First. That's great. Oh, I love people with a sense of humor. It's an organization, Jews on First is an organization that is founded to defend the First Amendment against the Christian right. And they've got a great little slogan, because if Jews don't speak out, they'll think we don't mind. And they've got a great video. And I want you to hear some of it. It's narrated by Edward Asner, and they've done a brilliant job. And the audio is really what matters. The video is sort of whipped cream. But they've done a brilliant job of pulling apart John Hagee's love for the Jewish people. And it's rather a lengthy video. You can see it by going to JewsOnFirst.org. And then you'll hear this. Pastor John Hagee, a preoccupation with the Jews. Sounds like stalking, doesn't it? Like I said, Ed Asner does the narration.
Today I'm talking to you about the final dictator, the rise of the Antichrist. Soon there will arise out of Europe a man who will walk onto the stage of history as a maker of peace, a superstar.
And that is Reverend John Hagee describing the Antichrist. This controversial televangelist and megachurch pastor is a favorite of Jewish groups because of his support for Israel. But Hagee's Jewish supporters might be surprised by some of the things he says about Jews and Judaism.
Of Satan, who was Lucifer, who said, I will arise and ascend to the hill of God. I will be like the Most High God. I will replace God. This phrase that I'm using in Scripture, the God of his fathers, is a phrase in Scripture used solely to identify the Jewish people. It suggests that this man is at least going to be partially Jewish, as was Adolf Hitler, as was Karl Marx. He will not...
Huh? What? The Antichrist will be partially Jewish, as was Adolf Hitler, as was Karl Marx. Now, that should be, Ed Asner doesn't exist. Well, he kind of does, but not really. What? How? I mean, okay, we got three. The Antichrist, Adolf Hitler, and Karl Marx. It's time for that old Sesame Street segment. One of these things is not like the others. One of these things does not belong. Karl Marx? Karl Marx? But then there's the whole Adolf Hitler thing.
Regard the desire of women. That means he's going to be homosexual.
Oh, wait! He's going to be a gay, partially Jew person who was like Adolf Hitler and Karl Marx. You know, if this guy wasn't so damn dangerous, it would be hard to watch him without just laughing yourself into a complete stupor.
Hitler, of course, was not Jewish. Much of what Hagee says about Jews reveals ignorance to the point of disrespect. It matters what Hagee says because he heads Christians United for Israel, representing hundreds of thousands of Christians. In this sermon, when Hagee talks about Jesus' Jewish youth, he reveals a lack of knowledge about Jews of that era.
The life of Jesus Christ was a father-centered life. At his bar mitzvah, at the age of 13, he said to his mother, "Don't you know that I must be about my father's business?"
Now, one of the things that I'm coming to the phone in just a second, so please stay with me. One of the things that you do get out of the video, and I encourage you to go to Jews On First and watch this video. One of the things that you get out of the video is the crowd of about 5,000 people that he's saying this to. And they're lapping it up as if it were truth. There's only one problem. There's no truth in it. Tall. None. Zip. Zilch. Nada. So, you know, Jesus' bar mitzvah, you know, in what would have been, what, 10, 12 A.D. then? Of course, they weren't calling it A.D. yet, but you get the idea. Yeah, bar mitzvahs during the Roman Empire.
During his ministry, he said, "He that has seen me has seen the Father." When indwelt by the blind man, and he mixed spittle with dust in his hand. Why did he do that? He did that.
Oh, this is too good. This is just rich. Just stick with me for a second.
Because the Jewish people believe that in the spittle of every firstborn child, male child, was healing power.
As the son of a sailor. Is it that kind of thing? Or the flowing robes and the magnificence of the seventh son who becomes the llama? A big hitter, the llama. Yeah. First son spit. You know, I was down at the pharmacy the other day, and there it was, right on the counter. Having problems with periodic blindness? Take home this vial of first sun spit. Not quite.
And he spit into his hands and made mud out of it and put it into the eyes of the blind person. What was he saying to every Jewish person who saw that? They said he is the firstborn of his father.
Funny, and I would have thought that they were saying, you know, that guy's just bug spray crazy. Spitting in dirt and putting dirt in. Every time I ever got dirt in my eyes, it hurt. But, you know, that's me. There's only one problem. As Ed Asner goes on to note, there were no bar mitzvahs back then. Bar mitzvahs didn't happen until like the 13th or 14th century A.D. And there was also no tradition of spitting in mud to heal people if you were a firstborn Jewish son. Oh, where's Mark Levine when I need him? This is too good. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Starve!
Starve!
Hey, Bob and Sandra. Oh, my God. You know what? That guy is outrageous. He's crazy.
He needs to be in a little rubber room somewhere with a straitjacket on, writing on the walls with a purple crayon between his toes.
No, I thought the star thing was bad enough. This is way up north, as I say.
Positively polar.
My God.
And you know, just running the audio, Sandra, doesn't do it justice, because you got to see the video of him miming, spitting in his own hand and making the little mud in the palm of his hand and pressing it out with his thumbs and stuff. I mean, he's there. He is in the moment. This is a method actor, Sandra.
No, but he's about 3 or 4 bills, ain't he?
Oh, yeah.
He's huge.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, he ain't been starving.
No. He probably, as Mike will always say, eating up all the kids in the audience.
Maybe that's why there are no children in the auditorium.
That's what I'm saying. I've seen the dude. That's one scary. He's scary, and his logic is so whacked. I mean, what is that, a documentary on it?
Yeah, this is JewsOnFirst.org did this, and they really did a good job. And
are they trying to expose the lunacy?
Yes, they are, especially in light of the fact that the Kufi conference is coming up this week.
But that freak Joe Lieberman is there praising and thanking again, isn't he?
Yes, he will, and I'm sure that once again he'll say that John Hagee is just like Moses, like he did last year.
Is he going to be in there wearing a yarmulke, too, or what, how's it work?
Oh, they'll be dancing the hora and wearing yarmulkes, and yeah.
Oh, God. Did you ever see that video that Blumenthal?
Yeah, Max Blumenthal's video last year is exactly what I was thinking of. Because there's that one scene where it's a cutaway to a girl who obviously didn't know what to do with her life after the Dead quit touring.
No, that chick was off the hook.
But the last time I saw dancing like that and clothing like that, I was at a Dead show.
Yeah, I've been to one in Grass Valley. I know the girl. I probably met her.
Yeah. So you get it, right?
Yeah. No. I remember those Dead concerts. We were too busy trying to get the hell high. I could care less what they were playing, but I do remember perusing the scene. It was crazy.
Oh yeah. I mean, I kept threatening one year that I was just going to throw it all away and go follow the Dead and sell grilled cheese sandwiches in the parking lot like everybody else.
Yeah, no, I mean, no, don't get me wrong, we had a good time, but I definitely thought, come on, yo, this is whack, because we were there to see Robert Cray, because he opened up for him.
Yeah.
And that was quite nice, and then the Dead came on, and I thought, well, let me just pile up these mushrooms right quick and continue on, you know?
Yeah, because it's about to get real interesting.
Well, anyway, no, that Hagee, well, no, the Dead, that was fun. This, what you're talking about, that's not fun. That's frightening.
It's terrifying, and the reason I've got so much respect for what Jews on First is doing is, first of all, this motto on the banner of their website, defending the First Amendment against the Christian right because if Jews don't speak out, they'll think we don't mind, is so important because one of the things they point out is that there's been all kinds of mainstream Jewish organizations that, we just think that Pastor Hagee is the neatest thing since sliced bread.
Well, isn't it more sort of just an expedient type relationship? I mean, most of these Jewish people they don't honestly get with it. Aren't they just with him to get the support for Israel?
Some of that is there. And there, there's a little bit of cynicism. I've had a lot of conversations with Mark Levine about this. There's a certain amount of cynicism of, Hagee's over there doing what he's doing because he thinks that Jesus is going to come back and let him start skewering Jews with the holy sword of righteousness. Really, Hagee believes that stuff.
Right, but it works for the Jews who want to keep Israel the way it is, though. Right,
and they're just betting that he's wrong.
Well, yeah, so they try to compartmentalize it somehow because
sure.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, this is it's a purely rationalized relationship. Bet he comes back, bet he don't,
Oh God, no, but this Hagee though. I mean, how is it that these people flourish? I can't believe a segment of society tolerates that.
Three words. San Antonio, Texas. That's where his megachurch is, Sandra. And every time they open the doors, a flood of people with their little pockets full of dollar bills just walks in. And they sit there and they nod like little robots while he's sitting there telling them made up stuff about bar mitzvahs in 12 A.D.
No, I don't, I was fairly speechless listening to that thinking, are you kidding me?
And then they have that huge conference in Washington where all the, you know, the power players show up, don't they?
Oh, yeah, they do. And Max will not be allowed to shoot this year. He did, however, he was on the show about a week and a half ago, and he did say that he would try to call us with a live report late this week. He's going to stand outside with his camera and his microphone and see if he can find some fundies that'll perfect him. Because that's what they're on about all the time, these fundies. They want to get the, they want to perfect up the Jews.
Oh, my God.
So I hope, you know, I told Levine ought to hook up with Max and see if they, you know, offer him a twofer deal, but, you know, a twofer at Koofy. It's got marketing possibilities.
Well, no, anyway, the other reason why I called is, I sent you that gospel. I thought you were like it. I didn't know you were going to bust out with that John Ashcroft. That is scary.
No, see, that's, but what you sent is gorgeous. And like I said, I could just have that stuff looping in the house all day and I'd be fine. But, it, you know, that it's when you see that word gospel, you know, there's gospel and there's gospel. That's the gospel.
I always thought that, that other stuff was, it had a different name. It wasn't gospel. It was some sort of Christian identity music. It's just how we used to separate it out, anyway.
But that, yeah, I mean, there had to be any, there had to, well, you can tell, I didn't play more than 10 seconds of him pulling the Ashcroft. But, see, that's where I got started in radio, Sandra.
Really?
5 hours a night playing Squire Parsons and the Chuckwagon Gang and the Happy Goodman family. Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Sandra, did I lose you?
Oh, no.
Oh, okay, okay.
I'm
okay.
On the phone!
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
That's all right. That's all right. But, yeah, I, 5 nights a week, my poor little teenage brain was roasted by the time I got to college. So.
No, that music is unbearable. I don't, oh, God.
Oh, but, you know, the something, you know, the Clark Sisters, Mighty Clouds of Joy, all of that beautiful, beautiful, beautiful R&B inspired.
Yeah, the Whinings, even though they're a bit homophobe and frightening, but they can sing.
Yeah, and that I can, because it's happy, it's uplifting. You know, I'll walk into a church that's got that going on.
But, no, for sure.
But
I mean, like I said, I'm not a believer, but you know, I love that music.
Oh, sure. And you know, on the other hand, you walk into Hagee's church, I guarantee you, you know, you'll get a little bit of that funeral. I called it funeral music when I was a kid, because it's like, you know, who would want to be a member of a religion that gives you this?
Yeah.
But they wised up some, because like in, you remember Ted Haggard, the guy that got caught with the Crystal Methodist?
Mm-hmm.
You know, those mega churches, they've got five-piece rock and roll bands and big-screen TVs and Fender Custom Studio guitars and, they've got the works, and they wised up on some of the music
stuff.
Well,
no, but that guy, you know, he's queer. He had to get some, you know, put some movement to it.
Well, that's where the problem comes in, because, no, no.
Oh, no, well, yeah, no, I have to cut it short, but I just wanted to chime in on that Hagee, because that was really freaking me out.
There's more. He's going to get around to, if we've got time, he's going to get around to explaining why the dollar bill looks like it does.
Okay, no, you got to continue on, so I'll leave you to it. Have a good one.
All right, Sandra, take care, and thanks for the tune.
Yeah, bye.
Bye now. Oh, mercy. Can you imagine what you just heard at the top of the hour, Clark Sisters? Can you imagine them singing in Hagee's church? Because when you're sitting there getting lectured on the part Jewish friend of Hitler, just like Karl Marx, Antichrist, that really makes you want to lift up your voice in a sound of celebration, doesn't it? Not quite. So let's get back to this for just a second here.
There is no known Jewish custom where Jews regard as special the spittle of firstborn sons. And there was no such thing as a bar mitzvah in Jesus' time. Jews did not have that ceremony until the 1300s. Here in a sermon about Jesus' birth, Hagee misrepresents the law of Moses.
When Joseph was told that his wife was going to have a baby conceived of the Holy Spirit, I'm going to tell you something, that took a lot of faith. Because according to the law of Moses, he was to report her to the high priest who would examine her. And if he found her to be pregnant, he, the high priest, would order Joseph to throw the first stone to kill Mary.
Mary. You got that so far? You got the whole Law of Moses thing going on there? I don't know how the chief priest was going to examine Mara. But if I was her betrothed and I loved her, I wouldn't be letting no chief priest nor chief nothing. But you've got that there, right? I mean, he's laid it all out. Pastor Hagee knows, he knows the Law of Moses, right? Not so much.
But he didn't live at that moment by the law of Moses. He lived by the word of God. And in that moment, he stood on a plateau of faith that changed the world.
It was never Jewish practice to stone people. By the time of Jesus,
Now, see, I got a little bit of an issue with that, because there's a whole bunch of stoning goes on early in the Old Testament. Like, if you're wearing raiment of two kinds of threads, you are to be taken out and stoned, or if you eat a barbecued shrimp, stoned, or if your kid talks back to you, you're supposed to take him outside the city gates and stone him. No, there was lots of stoning went on. But by the time of Jesus rolls around and they've gotten a little civilizing to them, by virtue of having been exposed to, you know, Greek civilization and some outside influences. The Babylonians were very well civilized, as were the Persians. By this time, no, there are probably not a lot of executing going on, because the Romans were handling that pretty well themselves.
Of judges heard court cases, not the high priest, and capital punishment for any crime was rare. Jewish organizational leaders might be surprised to hear Pastor Hagee repeat one of the crudest anti-Semitic conspiracy theories in a sermon.
Who controls America? America's government is being controlled by an unseen hand. Our economic destiny is controlled by something called the Federal Reserve.
Now, I've mentioned this in the past. When you hear, in modern thinking, when you hear this business about how the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and the yada, yada, yada control the Federal Reserve, that's just rebranded anti-Semitism from the protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, which, of course, was a creation of the secret police of Tsarist Russia. Some fan of Israel, isn't he? Whoopsie.
System. It is not a government institution. It is controlled by a group of Class A stockholders.
Stockholders. Who are they? Come on, name names. I've told you two names to look for. Here we go.
Among them, mostly Europeans, the Rothschilds.
Bingo!
And David Rockefeller.
The Anti-Defamation League says, for centuries, anti-Semitic propaganda has demonized the Jew as a conspiratorial, manipulative outsider, often with powers and designs of world domination. In more recent years, the anti-Semitic notion that the Jews dominate and command the U.S. Federal Reserve System and, in effect, control the world's money has surfaced across the extremist spectrum. According to the ADL, in the literature of bigots, the name Rothschild is a trigger for the most explosive of anti-Semitic tremors. Nevertheless, Hagee declares in all sincerity that the core of his work is opposing anti-Semitism. Hagee also talks about Jewish bank.
Here comes the fun. This is, you can't get anywhere near a right-wing fundamentalist, you know, one of these fundy morons, without they have to start rewriting American history. And this is a classic case of, you know, America was founded on Christian principles, and then there's that crazy-ass, crazier than a sprayed roach, Rod Parsley, out there. America was founded as a response to destroy Islam. You know, that's straw in the tequila bottle time, because it just... No, not at all, not even a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, so, but it goes on and on and on. Here it comes. Here comes the historical revisionism.
Hagee also talks about Jewish banker Chaim Soloman, saying that Solomon's donation to the cause of independence is a sign of God blessing America through the Jewish people.
You know, some of this stuff is so insulting. Listen to the way he describes the note. It's not patriotism on Chaim Soloman's part. It's not a desire to see liberty flourish. It's not because maybe Chaim Soloman was well studied and read up in Hobbes and Locke and Rousseau and all of that Enlightenment thinking. No. Not at all.
This is the story of Chaim Soloman, an investment banker in Philadelphia. When America was losing the Revolutionary War, Chaim Soloman went to the Jews of America and Europe, put together millions of dollars.
Even before there were dollars, he was putting together millions of dollars. That's one magic Jew, right?
And gave it to George Washington and to the American government without a note and without even so much as asking for it to be paid back. They didn't even ask for interest on the money.
Could it be? They didn't, you hear the way he put it? They didn't even ask for interest on the money, because, you know, of course, everybody knows, you know, Jews are money lenders, you know, and they got to have money at interest, and you know, and the Rothschilds, and, you know, there we are again. Didn't even ask for... Did it ever occur to this bloated, bloviating bastard that maybe the reason that American Jewry, led by Chaim Soloman, wanted to fund the revolution is because they thought it might be a total break with the hellish anti-Semitism of the past, and that in America there might actually be a country that wasn't founded and predicated on some particularly virulent, hateful brand of Christianity that every 50 years or so would go through spasms and pogroms and start hollering about how matzah's got baby blood in it, and oh, they poisoned the well, those Jews, and oh, we got to go kill them now. Yeah, all the stuff that happened in Europe. That maybe they thought there'd be a break with that, and that was worth getting behind. That maybe that was part of a native patriotism. But you see, there's anti-Semitism deep in the heart of Hagee, because Hagee can't imagine a patriotic Jew. They're just little playthings that are being manipulated by an almighty leading up to a really big fireworks show. God, I hate him.
You need to remember that. George Washington wanted to do something to honor the Jewish people. So
wait a minute. George Washington's going to start designing money now!
So he put a tribute on the American dollar. It's over the head of the eagle. It's to the Jewish people. Right over the head of the American eagle is the Star of David. That's a six-pointed star. Around that star is the Shekinah glory of God. That's a starburst.
It's the Shekinah glory of God. It's kind of the glory of God. Not really the glory of God, just the Shekinah glory of God. I don't speak Hebrew, and I got a sneaking suspicion that is not the correct pronunciation. He's on the back of the dollar bill now. Anybody got any old American money notes? Just curious.
Shekinah glory of God that dwelt over the tabernacle. If you turn it upside down, this is the menorah, the flames of the menorah that are lifting up. For all of you who are now reaching for a dollar.
Okay, because it's video and talking, dancing about architecture. He is now saying that the shield on the eagle on the back of a dollar bill, when turned upside down, with the eagle's tail feathers sticking up, equals flames on a menorah. Jesus, and I thought I was a little nutty for playing Pink Floyd albums backwards, but these Fundy Christians, mother.
Bill, we'll take an offering in just a moment and receive every one of them.
It's the only truth that happens during this entire sermon. Check it out.
Now reaching for a dollar bill, we'll take an offering in just a moment and receive every one of them.
For all of you now reaching for a dollar bill, we'll take an offering just in a moment, and we'll receive every one of them. Yeah, to the tune of, oh, I think he pays himself like $5 million a year and lives on a couple of hundred or maybe a 1,000-acre ranch somewhere outside San Antonio. Got Rolls Royces and Gulfstream jets and helicopters and, you know, all the flush flimball trappings of the good life. You know, he's got all those things that someone who follows a Jewish carpenter who never had a pot to in or a window to throw it out of would have if only, yeah, but you know, yeah.
Totally false. According to an official State Department history, the design of the Great Seal that Hagee is showing on camera was not put on the dollar until 1935. Its design was developed by a
That's because there wasn't a standardized dollar bill until, but you know that.
Congressional committee, not President Washington. The official description says that the 13 stripes, which Hagee calls a menorah, signify the original states. Moreover, Jews did not adopt the six-pointed star as a symbol until the 1800s. The history of the seal does not say that the cloud around the star signifies the Shekhinah, which...
Ah, the Shekhinah. It's not the Shekinah glory of God. Just a little bit, kind of glory of God.
Hagee mispronounced and misinterpreted. It is an expression that means intimacy with God.
So there you have it. Watch the rest of the video. This thing's 16 minutes long. I'm not going to do all of it. But this is the lunacy of the right-wing religion industry. And a bunch of politicians, mostly Republican politicians, are going to go and bow and scrape at the feet of this corpulent, pustulated, bloviating, self-made SOB this week. And what's even scarier, a bunch of fairly well-connected Jewish people are going to bow and scrape at his feet. People that this man goes into a quiet room and prays and masturbates over getting to kill. You think he doesn't get off on the idea of Jesus telling him to slaughter people? Come on, wake up. Wake up and smell the coffee. All of these right-wing fundamentalists who get off on talking about the end times, they really get off on talking about the end times. And thinking about it when Jesus looks down and says, you, Pastor Hagee, my good and faithful servant, take ye here this here mighty sword of justice and run it through the Jews who don't confess my name. Hallelujah! You know it! If you don't, I do. I've been around it. I've heard it. And we're just going to sit here and most of America won't even pay any attention to it. But you know what? And I know this is I run the risk of maybe losing. Most of Germany didn't pay attention to the little drunken bar brawls that the geeks in the brown shirts were having in the late 20s and early 30s. To the point that the day that Adolf Hitler was elected, you had his political elders saying, well, you know, I'll manage him. I can manage him. No. And you cannot manage the right-wing religion industry in this country because they are hell-bent on the destruction of this nation. Because by part and parcel of the destruction of this nation is getting us involved in more wars in the Middle East because just one more war, just one more war, one more, one more, one more. And Jesus will come down out of the clouds in his holy rolls with his mighty sword of justice And then the funds are really going to start. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So go to Jews on First. It's a play on words, see. Who's on first? What's on second? I don't know who's on third. Go to JewsOnFirst.org and have a look. Watch this video. Arm yourself. A part of their holy book has a little verse that says, study to show thyself approved. Learn this stuff. Learn the code. Hear it for what it is. Whenever you hear some otherwise decent person who is misguidedly prattling on about the Federal Reserve System and how foreign bankers control it and international monetary interests and rah, 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 and sooner or later, you'll hear the word Rothschild come up. And most of these people doing it don't have an anti-Semitic bone in their body. But because the overt stuff has been pulled out of it, the international Jewish banking conspiracy, that's how it used to, you know, that's how it was played in Hitler's Germany, so that had to be excised out. But to the people for whom it matters, they hear it and they know the code. So, yeah, see this film. It's important. It's actually important. Because this information is the sort of stuff that your knowledge of it and your willingness to oppose it may actually save someone's life someday. That someone may possibly be you. Because it's going to get worse before it gets better. There is manifest evil at work. You know, we had the news last week about how we're going to open up a diplomatic halfway house in Tehran. What have I got today? Washington says Tehran has 2 weeks to decide between suspending its uranium enrichment program and facing further isolation. They're delivering ultimatums, trying to poison the well before anybody can get the first word spoken. And in between now and the end of that two-week ultimatum, you're going to have the Kufi orgy. And that is going to be 3 or 4 days of solid Iran bashing and a demand, not a request, by God, but a demand that the United States start the bombing now. Because, see, bombing Iran makes, again, the bit with Jesus and the holy rolls and the clouds and the trumpets of thunder and the swords and the yee-haw, skewered one. Frog digging for Jesus. Yeah. That's going to go on. And it's going, and the people who are still in power in this country, it's going to temper their attitude toward it because they believe this crazy crap too. And that's what it is. It's crazy crap. It is completely disassociated and disconnected from anything resembling reality. They want, John Hagee wants a war with Iran so badly that he can taste the blood on his lips. And here's the fun part. It's not necessarily Iranian blood he tastes when he licks. There's blood he wants, and there's vengeance he's aiming for. And it is so very sad that these Jewish leaders who are getting in bed with him don't understand that we've been to this movie before, and that never again means something, and that never again should be applied to the likes of John Hagee. Because anybody who thinks that Adolf Hitler was just doing God's work, well, John Hagee thinks he's doing God's work too. So what does that tell you? Sorry, I didn't mean for this last hour to turn into a sort of pre-Wednesday night prayer meeting thing, but I saw this video, and I felt like we had to run some of the audio because this thing is coming up, this queefy meeting or whatever. And it is dangerous. It is dangerous to the Republic because this man is a theocrat. He's not a Republican. He's not a Democrat. He is a theocrat. And he wants a United States of America in which the Bill of Rights, with the exception of freedom of religion, which means freedom for his religion to rule your ass, he wants an America in which the Bill of Rights is a dead thing, in which civil liberties are a dead thing. Early on, he equated the Antichrist with Adolf Hitler and Karl Marx. What did Karl Marx ever say that made him stand in the same shoes and in the same light as Adolf Hitler? What did he ever say? Well, you know what he said. This is one of the most intelligent radio audiences in the entire world. You know what Karl Marx said. Karl Marx merely noted the fact that working people were treated like human rubbish and that there might be a better way of getting things done than just letting working people spend their entire miserable lives doing nothing but enriching the people who did nothing to earn the money in their lives. And that, in John Hagee's world, makes Karl Marx a dangerous, hateful man because he merely commented on the plight of working people. So, just keep all this stuff in the back of your mind. And think about it when you see it developing. This is not a prophecy program. And I don't need to misread 2,000-year-old the hallucinations in order to figure out what's coming. I can watch that corpulent old bastard stomp around his stage and talking about Mara, Mara, Mara. And I can see where he's going, and so can you. And it's not magic. It's just plain old-fashioned intelligence. Now, as for programming updates, I haven't seen anything come through from Peter Godbold. And I assume that he's lost his connection again. So that means that Strictly Confidential will be a rerun. And that being the case, this will be the end of the broadcast day. The live broadcast day, that is. We'll be back with more live programming for you tomorrow. Guy James is on the road, so he will be a rerun, but it'll be a wonderful rerun. Mark Levine will have a program you've never heard before tomorrow. I will be on the road as well, but I'm going to try to be broadcasting both tomorrow night from the campus of West Virginia State University and Institute West Virginia, and the following night from the campus of Concord College, Beckley. We'll be bringing you the remarks of author David K. Johnston. You want to be hearing that. You also want to be crossing your fingers that I don't screw it up and make it not happen. But you want to be hearing that if at all possible. We'll make it work. I'm going to be there early enough to make it work. So those are the next two nights. So maybe it's kind of fitting that we had a little bit of prayer meeting tonight, since we won't have a prayer meeting Wednesday night. In the meantime, do please remember that this network is supported strictly, almost exclusively, with the exception of the partial sponsorship of our dear friends at Coal River Mountain Watch. This programming, this network, comes to you through the dedicated contributions of you yourselves. It is you who find value and benefit in these programs who make it possible for these programs to take place. If you are already a contributor, please accept our heartfelt thanks. If you have never contributed to the program and are at all able to do so, please do make use of the PayPal button on the website. Or barring that, send it via snail mail to Head On, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, Paul Mary Boy, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, BECKLEYWV 25801. And again, so many thanks to those who stand shoulder to shoulder with us to make sure that this programming continues. And, of course, our thanks always do go out to the hardest-working, bravest people we know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Also, go to coalriverwind.org and sign the petition there. Help Coal River Mountain Watch and the folks in the Coal River Valley point toward a sustainable future with wind power that will provide jobs, that will make the community viable again, as opposed to blowing up the mountains and just bringing more death and destruction and devastation. CoalRiverWind.org. Thanks to Peter Godbold. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer. Thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk. WhiteRoseSociety.org. He's the one who makes the streams, the archives, and the podcasts do what they do, and provides the bandwidth. And I tell you what, it's a Herculean undertaking. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.